Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of The Rick Emerson Show is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Deep in the jungle.
President!
In a corrupt third world country.
I want to know what the hell's going on, Colonel.
If you're looking for soldiers.
You're timing your schedule for another job?
If you want to start a war. And you want no questions asked. You call in the Freedom Fighters.
Money talks, Colonel.
Peter Fonda is a leader of freelance mercenaries.
Let's go!
For the right price, his men are ready to pick up any gun.
That is one nasty dude.
Eager for any action. And willing to face any enemy.
Back! Look out!
But even for the freedom fighters, there are some things money can't buy.
When your boys start pointing guns at my boys, we don't smile back.
They've been double-crossed.
On the wrong side, man!
And left for dead. Now it's time to settle the score. Freedom Fighters.
It is 31 minutes after the hour of 1, and this is the month of April in the year of our Lord, 2011. I hear it drawing near on this Tuesday, April 19th, 2011, and welcome to day 12. From high atop the milkpacking district here in beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon, the home of all good things, and from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of this, the Emerson News Network. This is the Rick Emerson radio program. Hello, and thank you for joining us today. By the way, I don't think I mentioned this last hour, so we want to also thank, I think I mentioned listener Tracy, who was joining us today. We also want to thank listeners Diane and Samantha, who just changed their monthly subscriptions to yearly subscriptions. Having sampled for a week, they then listened for a month. Having listened for a month, they then said, my God, I can never be without this again. Let me give you more of my money. And we said, well, okay.
We are very popular with the ladies.
That's what I'm saying. It's Ladies Love Cool Rick, Don. I try not to brag about it. I try not to. Nobody likes that guy. You know, if you're showy about it, it's I find it's best to let people sense your prowess with the ladies rather than just being overt about it. You don't want to be, you know, if you're just waving it around like some sort of a sexing merit badge.
Helicoptering, if you will.
Am I? What?
You don't want to be doing
what
that.
Is helicoptering?
With the your waving your member about in a circular pattern.
I don't know where you think the penis is located or what you think it does, or if you think it can withstand some sort of an aerodynamic stress test like that.
Well, no,
like all the time.
We had a news story, and we had those questions exactly, where they said that a fellow was helicoptering his penis. And I, at the time, we thought to I had those questions exactly. I thought, how big was it?
I don't really remember the phrase helicoptering his penis.
Yeah.
Helicoptering your penis.
How do you forget that?
I don't know. By not having had it happen? You're sure this is a thing that didn't just happen in Dawnland?
No, I'm not sure of that at all.
All right. By the way, we have this little bit of breaking news that I will send you here in a moment. So we'll start with this here in a few. We have a breaking news story. We have a breaking snuff/geek watch.
Oh.
So that's no good. But, you know, the cruel hand of time comes for us all. Let me just send this to you. I'm going to send this to your Dawn and Rick Emerson account. Hold on.
Okay.
Everybody just... wait, hold on. Let me...
Just talk amongst yourselves.
No. Hold on. Let me just hold on a second. Let me just... give me a moment, won't you, please?
Oh, it's okay. Actually, some... three other people have said it to me already.
All right, you got there. I put it in your box. There you go. All right, fantastic. All right. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. So, penis helicoptering notwithstanding, we got lots of things on the horizon for you today. We got a Hick Watch coming up, a Taser Watch coming up, another installment of the greatest songs ever made. We'll also be recapping last night's
episode of Hell's the Thing of the Wedding.
There you go. Season 7, episode... I don't know. We got to be 80 or 90 episodes into this season so far. I just, at this point... I mean, I honestly, unless this season of House, and I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but unless this season of House just really ends with some sort of, I mean, unless one of them actually just does unzips their skin and reveals that they are a green reptilian overlord bent on enslaving all of humanity, I'm at that point like I was with Dexter, and like I got with I think Californication, where I'm just, you know, it's like, why, what am I coming back for next year? I mean, really, why would I be returning? Yeah. And I just don't know the answer to that. So we'll talk more about it here in a bit. We got to recap of last night's episode of The House, greatest songs ever made, Taser Watch coming up, Hick Watch coming up, a Snuff / Geek Watch we'll get to in just a moment. Also, we'll return to the business of helicoptering one's member here in just a second. Also, the best part is when you did the helicopter, you did it as though you were, like how somebody might twirl a baseball cap around his finger upended, or maybe indicate, as you did when I was a youth, that you were not really interested in something by waving your finger around in a sort of circular motion.
A big whoop sort of a
But you did it right up front, sort of like at chest level. Well, I guess you don't want to put your hand down on the table to simulate where the penis would actually be.
You wouldn't be able to see it. It would be under the table.
Yeah, I guess.
My finger was representative of the helicoptering penis in this scenario.
For what reason was he helicoptering his penis in this news story you claim we read?
I don't remember. I just remember finding that really odd and wondering how one would actually do that.
Was it... Yeah, okay, somebody's just saying twirling the penis is called helicoptering. I know. Please join us in the now.
See, it is an actual thing, apparently.
I'm just saying.
I just don't know how you twirl it like that, because most of them I've seen when they are twirlable are too small, to really get any momentum going.
What do you mean?
I mean, your flaccid penis is generally a little on the short side. And
hold
really...
on, when you say your flaccid penis, you're not referring to me, Rick Emerson.
Well, no, because I've never actually seen your flaccid penis could be enormous. I have no idea.
Could be.
But the average flaccid penis, at least with your Caucasian males, tends to not be long enough that it seems like you would get any real momentum going.
How many penises have you seen?
I've seen a lot of penises.
Maybe you're dating from the wrong end of the pool.
But I'm saying that, though...
Are you just dating in India?
But statistically, though, flaccid black penises tend to be longer than Caucasian.
But that's relative. I'm just saying, in general, seems like maybe you're dating a lot of thumbs over there.
Well, I mean, I guess it. I don't know. When I think of a propeller, I think of something with some actual length. I mean, maybe it's just me. It just seems like, you know, of this short little thing shouldn't really be called helicoptering.
That's what I'm saying. I think maybe you're. Maybe you're dating in the wrong part of town. That's all I'm saying. If your experience is, I'm just saying. I mean, it's, you know, I find fault with your premise.
Mm-hmm, all right.
So, but that's okay. You know, I guess it's more of a me thing than a you thing. Let's not talk about it anymore. I wish we hadn't discussed this. Okay. You are listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964. If you would like to engage with us telephonically today, and I know you would. It's 503-505-6964 with your comments, questions, clarifications, observations, ruminations, ponderings, musings, limerick, haiku, recipes, or perhaps just a discussion of whatever might be between your toes at the moment. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. That is rick@rickemerson.com. Don Taylor can be emailed if you like. That's Don, D-A-W-N. That is Don@rickemerson.com. That is... Don@rickemerson.com. You can also text if you like via Skype. That is our Skype username, Rick Emerson Show, all one word. And, of course, the text box open on the website and whatnot. Let's see. What else? So I mentioned Hick Watch, Stage Watch, House Recap, Greatest Songs Ever Made. Do we do the headlines? Did we do that just now?
No, we didn't do
that. Don Taylor tracking the following headlines for you on this Tuesday.
A congressman says President Obama needs to quit campaigning and solve the nation's problems. A man is arrested for wandering around drunk in a police station. And a smoke bomb ruins Hitler's birthday party.
Really?
Yes.
Was this a birthday party back then, or is he still sticking around and just sitting at a card table somewhere?
It's a...
smoke bomb and Hitler birthday party.
Right.
Here's the thing. If you ask me, I honestly don't know whether this is a story about something that happened like in 1942, and it is just now being only now can it be told about how. And then we were all sitting around the table, and Hitler says, "It's time to cut the cake." And then it took forever because he was real anal about making sure the slices were all the same size, but that he got the largest pink icing rose. And you know how that can just go on forever. And so then I said to Heinrich, "Why don't you just pretend that you're having an attack of gastroenteritis and we can be excused and we can get back to work?" But then there was a smoke bomb. And so then we all had to go into the shelter and put on our masks while we tried to make sure if the Fuhrer's okay. Or is it just like some guy last week going, "You know, it'd be great. We ought to have one of them there birthday parties for Hitler."
It's the second one.
Oh, see, I was going to wait and find out, but now I found out. All right.
That won't change any of the pleasure of this this particular.
That's okay. And I kind
of. Oh, I just realized that makes it a Nazi watch.
I kind of did the first one all by myself, too. So we've kind of gotten to the end of that already. Yes, it is a Nazi watch. Is today the 20th? No, it's tomorrow.
Tomorrow is the 20th.
So
which
tomorrow,
is actually
Hitler's birthday.
Hitler's birthday.
All right, okay. There you go.
I guess they were celebrating early because they just couldn't wait.
Well, maybe they're on German time. Okay, is that it? Are we are all headlined out there?
Yeah.
Awesome. All right, so that's all coming up later on today. So we got Hick Watch, Taser Watch, Nazi Watch. Hold on, let me add that. Nazi Watch. A little ad hoc Nazi Watch there. House Recap, greatest songs ever made. Snuff/geek. Someone is not deriding us for saying, "You have breaking news and yet you won't break it." And then he just types over and over again, "Break it, break it, break it." So we'll get to that here in just a moment.
Also, yeah. I have a, when we get the time, I have a very odd question from a listener. When we have a moment.
Is it about penises?
No.
Because I think that ship has sailed.
It's a discussion question about movies and things.
Okay. All right. Discussion question. Like, movies. Discussion question. Movies. Someone is asking about your caffeine intake today. They're speculating that you've either had none at all or far too much.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that someone you?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, it's like 799. Yes, it's me. Why wouldn't I just say it was me?
I don't know. Maybe you're just, someone is asking if maybe, I thought maybe you were.
No, it's like some guy or some woman.
Well, I mean, it seems like if it was too much or too little, you'd be able to tell one or the other. They just feel like I'm off my game and therefore it must be my caffeine level.
Realize I have access to exactly the same information you do, which is that question.
I'm a lady, so I'm trying to work it out by talking it out loud, like a story problem.
By which you mean just adding things to it that I didn't say.
Yes.
What you must mean is, as opposed to just, I think I actually told you that.
It could.
Don't add extra words to it.
I have what should normally be the right amount of caffeine in my system, but I got very little sleep last night.
Okay.
I had another one of those nights when I tried to go to sleep. And then I just felt like I needed to write.
Just like some people just wake up and they got to dance.
Kind of, yes. It's just like that.
When you were five, you knew you had to sing.
I'm working on this book, and I go to bed at night, and it's like I lay down to go to sleep, and then my brain just, I think it's that whole, I'm relaxing, and my conscious and my subconscious and all the different parts of my brain are sort of kind of smooth out. And then I start going, oh, I need to do this. And, oh, this needs to happen. And, oh, I'll forget it if I don't write
your
it down right now.
Your brain smooths out?
Or something.
Please do explain. What does that mean?
Well, I don't know. That might have not have been the right way to put it. But
I mean, I know it makes sense to you, but I'm saying, what do you mean by that when you say it smooths out?
I mean, like when you're just falling asleep or if you're in the shower or something and you get into kind of this meditative state and it's like your right brain and your left brain and your conscious and your subconscious all kind of meld a little bit. And it's not a dream state, but it's more of a like you start having these spontaneous creative ideas and remembering things and thinking of things because
your brain is rifling around in the drawer.
Right. Everything's just kind of like going, woo, free for all.
What about this?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So then my brain starts doing that, and then I'm awake because I can't stop thinking about stuff. And also then I worry that if I don't get up and write this stuff down, I won't remember it later. So then I get up and I start writing stuff down, and the next thing I know, it's like 3 o'clock in the morning, and Patrick is coming out and going, why aren't you in bed? And I'm doing, writing stuff. I'll be there.
Do you keep a thing next to your bed?
I used to, but I can't really read my handwriting very well. So then I tried doing it with the iPhone. I'd like turn on the iPhone and I'd go, and then that would wake up Patrick because of the light. So then I'd like duck my head under the cover, and I was doing it under the cover on the iPhone. And then I felt weird, like I was that just felt wrong to be like in my own bed hiding with my head under the covers,
right,
doing stuff on my iPhone. There's just something wrong about that. That's obsessive behavior.
You know, you could just, why does it wake? Is it because the light is so bright? Because you could actually just, you could just dim it down a little bit.
Yeah, that's
there's
true.
Like a whole nighttime setting, I think, or whatever.
But I have to turn it on first to get to that, to do that. And at that point, the room
life is hard.
What I need is one of those pens. Eric Snyder had one of
those. That has a light on the end of it.
That has a little light on the end of it. And I need one of those.
I was going to get you one of those for Christmas, and then I just, but I figured you already had one.
No, I
figured there was no way, no world in which you wouldn't already own one of those pens.
I don't. I've known a couple of film critics who've had them, and they seem very handy. But because my whole thing with when I was taking notes for movies and sitting there making notes in the dark, I'd have to write my review within like 48 hours of taking my notes, or else I wouldn't be able to just figure out what my notes said.
Yeah, Ebert has one of those, and it's he was actually the first person I ever even heard of who had one, and then it was like Ebert went to the, because I think it's like the guy at the company that makes the pen with the light on the end of it sent one to Ebert as soon as they were manufactured. He's like, guess what we just put on the market, and Ebert used one, and he said he came back the next week and like everybody in the world had one because they're just like the greatest device ever. So it sort of amazes me that you guys just don't have a big box of those, like you and all film critic folk.
Yeah, no,
big box of those just sitting around.
I've never owned one of those, and I shouldn't. I've thought about it, but I've never actually owned one.
Now, do you write on a schedule?
No, because I've gotten off my schedule. I've gotten to this weird schedule where I get all hyped up on the caffeine and I do this, and then I go home and I should be writing when I get home or in the evening, but I go home and I'm tired and I nap, and then that's when I should be writing. And then I get up and then I'm just not good for anything because instead of being refreshed, I just feel like crap. So I need to figure out...
Have you thought about not napping?
Yes, I have thought about not napping. I need to find a new schedule, and I've been trying to figure it out. And lately, my schedule has been staying up until 4 o'clock in the morning and writing, and then going to sleep, and then having to get up at waking up at 7 when the alarm goes off. And it's just
have
not
you thought about waking up later?
Not really working. Well, no, because I have to drive Patrick to work, and some days he goes to work at 8:45, but some days he goes to work at 7:45. And so I have to sleep. I have to get up by at least 7:15 so I can, like, throw on pants and drive him to work.
Well, come on. Let's not get too fancy about things, Dom. So get all continental about it. All right. Well, I have no help for you then.
I'm out of
suggestions.
And I would sleep late like you do. I would stay up late and write and sleep late like you do, except I have to get up and I have to spend a couple hours, like, doing new stuff.
So what time do you get up? You get up at 7?
I get up. Well, I admit some days I get up at 7:15, drive Patrick to work at 7:30. I'm back home by about 7:45.
What time do you imagine
and then
I get up?
Then I go back to bed.
I mean, you know, all things being equal. I mean, there was the day I overslept. But I mean, you know, relatively speaking, what time do you imagine I get out of bed?
Well, I figure when you don't do Outlook Portland, I figure you probably sleep until like 9.
Yes,
or
no,
so.
That's true. No, that's a fair point. Yeah, I usually get up around 8:30 or 9. Okay. I was just wondering if you had this image of me like in a George Jetson thing at home at like 11:42, springing into the car.
I have seen you some days when you've come in at 11:30 and your eyes were still like a little bit closed, still closed.
Yeah,
but,
that's,
you know.
That usually just means it's time for another refill, Don. That's what that's. That means I'm a quart low.
But yeah, I need to figure something out, and I haven't quite figured it out yet.
Okay.
Like I said, some mornings I drive Patrick to work, then I come home, and then I go and I get back into bed for another hour and a half. So I don't, you know, it's just not working. I'm getting little bits of sleep, and then what happens is I do like I did on Sunday, where I just slept like all day. I literally slept all day.
You had acquired a sleep deficit, as they call it.
Yeah, I got up. I got up about 10. I did stuff for a few hours, and I went, I'm really tired. And at like 1, I went back to bed, and I didn't get back up till 7:30.
Okay. So anyway, she's had the normal amount of caffeine, I guess.
There's no crazy here, honest.
Uh-huh. I'm not passing judgment. I'm just saying. It was just.
On the other hand, the writing is going great.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
I'm just saying. Caffeine intake, normal. It is the... somebody says we need to introduce Patrick to a little thing called TriMet.
Well...
I'm not going to get in the middle of that.
Well,
you all.
Yeah, and we live in Tualatin, and we only live like a mile from his work. So he can walk, except...
What is up with that?
I drive it...
It's a mile. Isn't there somebody he can carpool with? I thought he lived on the other side of the state or something. I was thinking it was like he lived just like dozens of miles away. I thought he was like working in downtown or something.
No, I've just been
introduce him to his legs. lives a mile from. I know he almost died. We've been doing this forever.
He often walks home in the afternoon, and when the weather is nice, he walks home all the time. But it's like it's been really cold and it's been really rainy. And plus, I admit it's a reason for me to get up, so then I don't lounge around in bed till.
I think
too late.
Any and all sympathy for the situation has just dissipated, by the way, because I think Mama needs to be cracking the whip. Seriously, what is... I mean, look, I like Patrick and all, but I mean, for the love of God. Can you imagine if I told my wife that she had to get out of bed to take me like a mile someplace? She'd tell me to get bent. So, no. I'm just... Yeah, you don't want to... Yeah, you want to do that. By the way, I'll put a photograph of this online. The people aren't really able to see this at the moment. I'll post this to Facebook here in just a second with my magical iPhone. So, you know, I do... You were mentioning Outlook Portland, and I totally have forgotten about this. So because I do Outlook Portland, and there's that whole thing of, like, you know, it's like you go to a you've done TV or whatever. It's like you go and there's makeup and there's like somebody who comes out and says, okay, well, I think you're in autumn, so let me just do this. And, you know, let me just bring a little definition to your sharp, delicate features. But at a certain point, my vanity just sort of, you know, it was such that I decided just to cart around my own makeup with me because, you know, taking a page from the Sarah Dillon, Tim Riley playbook. So at one point I went to the makeup place and I bought, like, I asked the chick at the CW, like, whatever the makeup was they used for me, and I said, well, I'll just get my own, because, you know, occasionally I go there and it's like, you know, it's like they're out, or they've got, like, this one time I went to do Outlook Portland one day, and it's like they had been doing some remote shooting, and so they had taken the makeup, all of the makeup supplies with them, because they've been doing like a remote filming thing somewhere, and so they hadn't brought it back, and so there was, and so then I ended up, it's not like any amount of makeup is going to make me look good, but I looked worse than normal because I was just all pale, and it was just like a big glass of milk on camera, so I was like, well, screw that, I'm just going to have, you know, my own stuff that I keep with me.
I remember one of those first, HD telecast that you guys did, when you first switched to HD, you looked kind of weird.
Well, we're not actually in HD, so that's just the fact that I look weird.
Oh, okay. Well, the lighting changed or something. There was this period where you changed some things around the set. And
there was a time when we were changing the set, we were changing the lighting, we were, in fact, changing the kind of makeup that they used at one point. It's, you know, it takes any number of variables. There's a lot of tumblers in the rake, the make me look decent lock, that they all have to line up just right, and if you're off by even one, it's 1,000 miles of bad road. It's just like me and Cameron Diaz there. It's just like looking at a mud hole on camera. But at one point I switched from using Mac to using this like Bare Essential stuff, which is what the woman at the CW had recommended. So I go to the Sephora store or whatever. It's where they sell the Bare Essential stuff. So I go there once and I made the worst mistake. I did the worst thing imaginable, which is to pay for something with a credit card. And so now it's like my mailbox at home is just overflowing with stuff from the girly Sephora store. It's like getting stuff from the Hello Kitty store sent to your house because it all is addressed right to me. I will put a photograph of this up online so everybody can see it here in just a moment. But I would like for you to now look at what my wife was greeted with when she came home yesterday, addressed to her husband.
Oh, look at that.
Look at that. There you go.
A sexy, sexy lady.
But it's not even
it's about the joys of fragrance.
But I mean, just look at that. I mean, it's just...
Pink.
It's like a satire of what a makeup catalog would look like. So this was a... And then on the back is a woman grabbing her bosoms.
Yeah.
So there you go. So that's what...
Hey, free samples.
Yeah. So that's what was waiting for Lara when she got home yesterday. So apparently if I want to stop by the Sephora store at Clackamas Town Center, I can get 20% off. So there you go. All right. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. I said that in Legion of News that I would get to this observation about a sitcom that our friend Seamus sent to us. So we'll do that. Then we'll go right to the news desk because I don't want to be accused of just, not getting to the breaking news here. Let's see. Where did this go? So this is from Seamus. And I don't know if you ever watched Third Rock from the Sun. I mean, I sort of did every now and again if it was on. If it was like a thing that happened to be on, like if I was somewhere or somebody's house or if it was just, I don't know. If I was watching something else and I was in the other room and I forgot, like if I was watching King of the Hill and I forgot to just turn it off and it just continued to be on that channel and Third Rock would come on, I would occasionally have it going in the background, A, because that Third Rock daughter was hot, and also because John Lithgow is hilarious. And that's a guy that I'll watch in almost anything. But here's something that I had never realized until Seamus actually sent this to me. He said, the subject line of this is, and this itself is a double entendre. Subject line of Seamus' email is, dick jokes. So did you ever realize how filthy and crude the episode names of Third Rock from the Sun were? They're all variations on dick. I watched a random episode and he said, that was a really crude show for the 90s. I happened across a scene in which, by the way, they're at a police station and Lithgow is sitting with Jane Curtin. A cop says, it is strange. We were talking about the Golden Girls last hour. It is strange that this was actually allowed on the air in the 90s. I mean, this is not post-Janet Jackson, but really it was several years pre-Janet Jackson, which is just as puritanical. It says, Lithgow is sitting with Jane Curtin and a cop says, quote, are you ready to finger the perp? Lithgow replies, I've tried, but she won't let me. That does seem very... It seems very forward. It seems...
It does, and not even that funny. Just crude.
It seems like a thing that they wrote just figuring that the standards and practices would take it out, and then it wasn't taken out. So then he sends me... And here's the thing. You yourself don't have a wiki entry, although you might by now. I mean, it might be gone again. I just know... You're an internet person. Is that what it described you, an internet person?
An internet person,
You're
yes.
an internet person, so you may have a Wikipedia entry at this point. I'll put it this way. John Stamos does. There was a Wikipedia entry for just Third Rock from the Sun episodes with apparently a whole subsection about all their titles. Because the titles of Third Rock from the Sun episodes, I'm just gonna read off random titles. These are all real. This is not like the porn variation. These are all real titles of Third Rock from the Sun episodes. Dick Smoker, Green Eyed Dick, I Enjoy Being a Dick, The Art of Dick, Frozen Dick, Angry Dick, Father Knows Dick, World's Greatest Dick. There is, in fact, an episode of 30 Rock just called, or of 30 Rock, of Third Rock from the Sun, just called Dick Jokes. I Break for Dick, We'll Work for Dick, 15 Minutes of Dick, Dick and the Single Girl, 11 Angry Men and One Dick. But that's like a third of the list that he sent me, by the way. And he sent this to me at 3:19 a.m. So if you're ever wondering what the rest of the world is doing while you're trying to, I don't know, create art or whatever the hell you're doing. Trying to dwell in the world of literature. This is what Seamus and I are talking about online. So there you go. Because I often feel like, I know this sounds gay, and I don't mean gay in the weird sense, I mean gay in the gay sense. By gay, I mean homosexual. I often feel as though Seamus and I are the only people alive late at night. I feel as though everybody... Do you ever get that sense when you're talking to or you send an email to somebody or you receive an email from somebody and it is like 3:40 in the morning and you do feel like there must be no one else in the city who is or in this time zone who is awake because it's like the inbox has been strangely quiet for a while or your phone isn't ringing. You're not constantly getting texted or whatever. And then it's like I'll get a thing from Seamus that he clearly has spent a lot of time working on. And it's all about, like, Third Rock from the Sun episode. And then I'll reply back to him. And then I get something back, like, half an hour later. He's clearly put a lot of thought into his reply to my reply. And I think to myself, like, is everybody... Does everybody just stay awake all the time now? Or is it, like, just the handful of us? I don't know.
I've wondered that about some of the people I know. Because, like, Scott Weinberg, this film writer and was my editor at Cinematical, I don't think he ever sleeps. And that was the thing that we would be sending emails back and forth or talking on the phone at like 2 o'clock my time, and he was in Philadelphia, so it's like 3 a.m. his time, and it's like I always wondered when do you actually sleep? And now that I do like Words with Friends, I'll be just sitting there, and it'll be like 2 o'clock in the morning, and all of a sudden it will light up. It's like, you know, somebody just made another move on your game with so and so, and it's like. Someone, okay, sure, and then I'm playing Scrabble with someone at like 3 a.m., and I wonder, why are they awake? I have no idea.
You really are wondering why they're awake?
Yeah.
Okay.
I know why I'm awake. I wonder why other people are awake.
Before we do anything, this would actually be the perfect place to make this other observation that I was... I had a technological observation / question that I was going to get to, but having been accused by, I believe this was a friend Jesus in the OC, and how great, by the way, that is stuck. That it was Aaron in the OC until... Why did it become Jesus?
I don't remember.
That doesn't matter. Anyway, so that apparently... And he's altered his screen name and everything, which is sort of awesome. So before we do anything else, we should get to this Snuffwatch / Geekwatch. And then I don't know. Sort of just out of that, we'll just kind of pivot onto this thing that I was going to mention right now. But we'll put that off for a second. Before we do anything else, let's just... hold on. Wait. There we go.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
So you've got to decide now if it's going to be
Snuffwatch.
Geek news, snuff news, or breaking news.
No. So. Well, it's breaking snuff news, so we'll do this. We'll... Breaking Breaking Snuff is the title of my new pilot for a series about Appalachian tobacco farmers. Here's Don Taylor.
Elizabeth Sladen has passed away at the age of 63. The actress is best known for portraying Sarah Jane Smith in Doctor Who and the Sarah Jane Adventures. The cause of death is not yet clear. Doctor Who magazine tweeted, "With great sadness, we must report the loss of our beloved Sarah Jane, actress Elizabeth Sladen, the best of best friends. Too, too sad." Doctor Who writer Paul Cornell said, "Very sorry to hear about Elizabeth Sladen, a great actor, special to everyone of my generation, and a whole new one." That is Elizabeth Sladen of Doctor Who fame, dead at 63.
And maybe I might have missed this. What did she play in Doctor Who?
She played Sarah Jane. She was the Doctor's first companion in the early show. And then during this new incarnation, they actually gave her her own spinoff show briefly called The Sarah Jane Adventures.
Okay. And so was this the version of the show that you liked?
No, I liked Torchwood, which was yet another spinoff.
All right, because you did not cotton to the first sort of installment of Doctor Who.
The Sarah Jane Adventures was interesting. It wasn't entirely successful, I didn't think, but I liked her as an actress very, very much, and her character was really interesting. They took this character who had been the Doctor's companion back in the 70s during one of the early incarnations of the show, and they brought her, the actual original actress, back as Sarah Jane today, who has sort of never given up exploring the unknown and the craziness and hoping that the Doctor would come back eventually.
That's fantastic. I like shows who do stuff like that, where they put a little twist on something and they do it in a way that you don't necessarily expect.
Yeah.
All right, so she was how old?
63.
All right. So there is your snuff watch for Tuesday right here on the Rick Emerson radio program. Excellent. By the way, somebody's saying, as long as Patrick gets no relief from restless leg syndrome, you get no relief from having to take him. Well, of course he's not able to walk. His legs are all messed up because he's just there twitching all night, Dawn. So it seems like that's a problem that sorts itself out pretty easily. That's like five birds with one stone. So, I mean, you know, I'm just, not that it affects me at all. I'm just passing it along.
There's a whole mousetrap, like continuance of solutions for things. That if you know,
it always ends there, though.
Yeah, it always ends with the humping.
Always. Well, you don't even have to. That's the thing, is you keep afraid, like humping, like you have to move a lot.
You kept calling it getting with the humping.
Well,
really,
it's a figurative humping.
Could just, you know.
It's just more of a flexing.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is just, look, you know, I mean, it's like the guy says, you got room to, you know, got time to lean, you got time to clean. So I'm just, you know, you're there, he's there, you've got hands.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they're not just there for decorative purposes, I would imagine. I'm just saying that, you know, and that way everybody be a little bit more refreshed when they came in the morning. That's all I'm saying. I'm just, you know, I'm looking out for everybody. I'm looking out for the people, Don. You're listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. Thank you for joining us. Never mind. I was just going to mention a whole thing about the printer again, but if you had more zeal, more energy, more vim and vigor, then you wouldn't be vexed or thwarted by the idea of putting ink in the printer in the morning, and everything would not have spiraled so out of control on your side of the table.
Now, here's the thing. I was not vexed.
What time did you get here?
I got here. Well, first of all, Sarah and Greg were here. I didn't get into this studio until 20 of. So I'd only actually been in the studio for about 5 minutes before you got here. We had 20 minutes till showtime. I printed out my stuff, went and pulled it off the printer, and discovered that not a lick of it had actually printed. There was no ink. You walked in. You walked over there to your side of the table, which is by the printer. You, who have replaced the printer cartridge before and are taller than me, so can see over into the top easier. And I asked very nicely, would you put this new print cartridge in the printer?
This is exactly as nice as you were this morning,
by the way. And it just became a thing. It turned into a thing.
I think the thing is all on one side of the table and not so much the other. I was just expressing wonder this morning that you said, quote, you didn't know how.
Well, because like, I've never actually...
You're like one of the most tech-savvy people I know. Yeah. I just don't... Here's the thing. You are hoist by your own petard here. The idea that, quote, you don't know how to put the ink in the printer when I can do it and I'm retarded.
Yes, but I've never done it on this printer and we were pressed for time.
You had 20 minutes.
Yes, to get the thing in, to get it started, to get it run, to get my stuff printed out, to sort through everything and put it into its little stacks and get ready to go. And I just asked. I asked nicely, would you put this?
Which I did.
Would you do this? Yes, after standing there and accusing me of not being, first of all, using my feminine wiles.
I didn't say that.
Get over being a girl and asking men to do stuff for you.
That is not what I said. That is, in fact, not what I said.
That was part of what
I
said.
I said, why don't I say.
You also inferred I was too stupid to know how to do it.
Okay, well, first of all, that's. And it wouldn't be infer, it would be imply, and I didn't do that either. So, that is a drastic revision. In fact, that's not even just a drastic revision, that's just a lie. I did not imply you were stupid. Have I ever once implied you were stupid?
It sounded very much like it this morning, saying about...
Do I honestly seem like I would ever accuse you of being stupid? Does that really sound like a thing that I would do?
I wouldn't think you would, but honestly...
No, that's not what I'm asking.
It does not sound like something that you would do.
I guess what I was saying is, I do not believe that you are incapable of putting ink in a printer. So that's what I'm saying. And so when you're all, I don't know how to do it, it sounds like you're sort of being a parody of like, but the car is so difficult. I just don't understand. You know, that's a thing I would do because, like, I'm dumb. So, like, that's my thing is, like, it is just patently unbelievable that the idea that, like, you could – and there was no time saved, by the way. Because the entire time you were waiting for me to put the ink in the printer, you were kind of sitting there doing nothing. So there was, in fact, zero time gained. It was a net wash in terms of time.
I didn't know that. For one thing, I didn't know you would spend 5 minutes uncoiling the cord of your headphones.
I do that every day.
Well, I didn't realize that it would take you that long.
Okay. I do it every day right here.
I also thought when I said, you know, could you do this for me? You might actually just, you know, do it.
Well, no.
Rather than put it aside and then do all of your stuff first, particularly since one of the reasons I was asking you was because we were pressed for time.
We got everything. It's the idea that, like, the show didn't go on the air. Everything is fine. So I don't understand. I don't exactly, like, get what you thought was going to happen. It's not like that there was some sort of nuclear meltdown in the studio. I mean, like, half the time we start Legion of News, you're still printing stuff and I'm handing it to you. I mean, it really wasn't any different. I'm just saying, like, you know, I have no problem putting the thing in. I had, like, some stuff I was doing. I put the thing in, you printed it, you got the news, bam, done. So I'm just, I guess my whole thing, I just keep going back to, like, that you were mystified that, like, you just couldn't go over there and go, well, I guess I take the other one out and I put this one in positioned the same way as the old one. It's not like, you know, it's not rocket surgery.
No, but...
I'm just saying. It just seems like I would think that you being one of the smartest people I know, especially in terms of technology, would just go, I don't know how to do it, but, you know, I'll go learn to do it right now.
And I would have if I wasn't trying to get it done faster by asking you to do it because you have done it before.
But that wasn't any faster. Even after you saw me sitting here, you just...
But it should have been faster.
Well, that's like in an alternate universe. It's not this one. Like, when you saw that I set it aside and wasn't obviously going to put it in right away, I'm just saying you just kind of sat there and sort of just went into screensaver mode.
Well, because my options at that point were to say, Rick, would you do it now? And then you would be annoyed at me because you'd feel like I was nagging at you. Or to go over and pick it up and say, okay, I'll do it myself. And then you would accuse me of being huffy.
Somebody's asking if this is because Patrick needs to put more ink in your printer. I'm not saying that that's the case. That was somebody right here. And by somebody, I mean Keelan. So I'm just saying.
It always comes down to that with Keelan, doesn't
well,
it?
Well, you know, I'm just passing it along. Just passing along the observations. All right. I'm just saying. It's just a thing that I'm, you know. I would just say, you know, what would Rosie the Riveter do, Dawn? Would she say, we can find a man to do it? No, she'd do it herself. That's okay.
Or she'd take some kind of big piece of power equipment and shoot you in the head with it.
No, it's fine. But you know, you didn't ask me to open your Vizo today, as you have recently. So that's okay.
This morning it opened just fine on its own.
See, you are making inroads. There's nothing you can't eventually learn how to do, Don. That's the moral of the story. Mm. There's nothing that you can't eventually understand. You know, if you just really put your mind to it. Mm. You don't find me nearly as amusing as I do, but that's okay.
No, I really don't.
But here's the—it doesn't really matter because I find myself amusing, you know, enough for like five people. So I mean, the amusement level I'm finding in my own banter today is like you know, I would say it's tenfold what it normally is. And that's really what matters.
It's like a circus and a brass band and a carnival all wrapped up in one.
What is?
Your side of the table.
Well, to me anyway. Yes. No, this is one of those things where I am both ringmaster and audience, and also the clown plus the girl who dangles by the thing from her teeth. Let's see. Oh, he says it's not only Keelan wants you to know that not only does put ink in your printer work, but also opening her Viso actually works as well. If Dawn would have Patrick open her Viso more often.
Sure.
There you go. Awesome. We already opened the news, but we should do it one more time here. So let's see. And wait. There we go.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Well, let's move on to our Hick Watch.
Yeah, excellent. Here is your Hick Watch for Tuesday, right here on the Rick Emerson radio program.
Copenhagen makes me feel so good. Copenhagen, the way I know it should. Well, I put a little chew in my mouth, go spitting, slobbering all around the house. That Copenhagen makes me feel so good. Oh, yeah.
Here is Dawn Taylor with your Hick Watch.
Alabama's cockfighting lobby appears to be on the verge of blocking another bill that would impose stiffer penalties for the crime.
Stiffer.
And in a related story, Alabama has a cockfighting lobby.
Of course. Of course they do. Well, it's one of the... Did you say that there's a ban or that it's legal and they're talking? Because there was one. There was like two states where it was still legal.
Oh, it's still legal there. They want to impose stiffer penalties. No, I guess it's not legal. They want to impose stiffer penalties. They want to make it hella illegal.
Here's the thing about Alabama. Cockfighting... only kind of illegal. Vibrators, totally illegal.
Can't have a dildo.
State Representative Jim Barton, a Republican from Mobile, said that while House Bill 74, which would elevate the offense from parking ticket levels to hundreds and possibly thousands of dollars in fines and potential jail time, has passed through committee, it probably won't be considered by the full House. Barton said the sentiment of the House, particularly a lot of the northern Alabama representatives, is that they do not want to deal with it. I think there's been a lot of pressure on those guys. The pressure, he says, has come from the Alabama Game Fowl Breeders Association.
How many members do you suppose that has?
I don't know.
Is that a powerful organization? Do they wield a lot of political clout, do you think?
It's the cockfighting lobby.
Okay.
They have helped to derail similar bills in recent years. The current fines on the books are $20 to $50. For cockfighting.
So it's sort of been decriminalized.
Yeah.
Yes.
Alabama's state director for the Humane Society, Mindy Gilbert, said Alabama has the weakest cockfighting penalties in the nation and as a result has become a destination for cockfighting.
A destination for cockfighting.
Go on a cockfighting vacation.
That's
to
awesome.
Alabama.
That should be Carnival Cruise Line's next big promotion.
She added that she's exasperated to see cockfighting supporters lobby lawmakers to go easy on criminal activity. This bill would make conducting cockfights a Class C misdemeanor, punishable by up to $500 fine and 3 months in prison for the first offense. Subsequent offenses would be classified as a Class B misdemeanor, punishable by up to a $3,000 fine and 6 months in prison. In addition to people who put on cockfights, such punishment would also apply to those who attend cockfights, sell or train a rooster for cockfighting, participate in business dealings related to cockfighting, bet on cockfighting, and other related activities.
Doesn't it seem strange that they haven't brought in a cockfighting subplot on House at some point? That seems like one of those things that, you know, it would be sort of wackily horrible that he would, you know, that they'd find that he was funneling, you know, X amount of his income every week to like some cockfighting league in like Guatemala.
Yeah, I could see that.
They really do hit on something in this story, though, that I believe just automatically, without even just a second thought, that phrase about they just don't want to deal with it. Because, I mean, like every minute you just spend, like, I don't know, some legislative session in Alabama talking about cockfighting. I mean, it's just another minute that you fall behind the rest of the nation. I mean, that really is. And plus, it is another moment where you appear in every Google News alert everywhere as exactly what everybody believes you already to be.
I love the, by the way, I love the, I wish I had audio for this guy. He is the spokesman for the Alabama Game Fowl Breeders Association, or ALGBA. Apparently, they sent out a message on their online message board, a warning about the legislation, saying, get your checkbook out and mail in your dues, no excuses, and make another checkout for a donation to ALGBA because your hobby just got a lot more expensive. Asked whether hobby referred to cockfighting, this woman, the spokesperson, Lewis, said... the majority of people who have gamecocks in Alabama Yeah, they do cockfight as a hobby. That is not to say that all the members the association are cockfighters. She also asked readers to visit their lawmakers to lobby against the bill and to come bearing gifts, a request that prompted a formal ethics complaint from the Humane Society, to which Lewis replied, they're suggesting items of a relatively minimum value I would be acceptable, according to the Ethics Commission director.
And so by gifts, they mean bribes.
Well, she said that the ethics complaint is a publicity stunt and said bringing a gift is about manners, not bribery. Uh-huh. She said, in my upbringing, I was taught that when you visit someone, you take a small gift.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So back when I was a girl, when I was talking to my legislator about cockfighting.
Jesus God almighty.
You brought a small gift.
So they feel that the laws lack teeth at this, or knives at this at this juncture. They find that they need to
not enough beak.
Yes. All right. So there you go. There's your good Christ almighty. There's your Hick Watch for Tuesday.
Copenhagen makes me feel so good. Copenhagen, the way I know it should. Well, I put a little chew in my mouth, go spitting, slobbering all around the house. That Copenhagen makes me feel so good. How about you?
All right, let's do like... Sorry. Let's do like... let me just spit into the microphone. Let me just... let's do like... God damn, it's 2:15 already. Yeah. What the hell? How did that happen? All right.
Well, we had to have that about the printer.
Yes, during which, by the way, Jesus in the OC was just, first. He just he was mocking us earlier for breaking news and then not actually breaking it. Then he just started typing "fight, fight, 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 fight" in all caps, which then ended with him just typing again. He's a guy, and it's not like all caps almost doesn't even exist for him because it's like he doesn't use it occasionally to make a point. He just uses nothing but all caps. So, like, there are no lowercase letters in his dojo. He just ends it by just typing it again in all caps. Work it out sexually. So that's not going to happen, by the way. So,
although we do have that nice big pump bottle of lotion that you just brought in.
The Midsummer Night's Cream.
Yes.
Oh, I put that picture of the Tron porn, the big Jim Willie sent. I put that up on Facebook this morning, and that was immediately met with a round of huzzas from everybody. Still to come, we got your Hick Watch. We got a Taser Watch coming up. Also a Nazi Watch, House Recap, Greatest Songs Ever Made, and so forth. All right. But let's do like one more here, and then we'll get into the thing.
A 26-year-old Florida woman was charged with stealing beer from a Tom Thumb convenience store, although she didn't go into the store herself. On April 2nd, a woman drove her red Chevy Impala to the Tom Thumb market. She parked her car at the edge of the parking lot, which was out of sight of the cashier. The woman's passenger, identified only as Nikki, went into the store, grabbed an...
Nikki with two Ks?
Yes.
Okay,
and
just,
an I.
Just checking.
Yes. Grabbed an 18-pack of Bud Light beer, shoved it under her shirt, and left the store without paying. The cashier followed Nikki out of the store and took down the license plate of the Impala. Later, the 26-year-old owner of the Impala dropped Nikki off at an unknown location. The driver, however, was charged with larceny, a second-degree misdemeanor.
You know, the Impala, I can't remember the last time there was an Impala in a news story where, like, the driver was doing something really, really great. Or, a guy who drove an Impala, like, stopped off and just gave a lot of money and food to children at a charity somewhere.
What are you wearing, by the way, that you can stuff an 18-pack of beer under your shirt?
I think you're wearing a lot of fat. That would be my guess. They say it's under the shirt, but I would say under the shirt is a whole lot of Nikki. Maybe Nikki not so darling, and maybe smuggling the magazine as well as the beer. I don't know. That would be my. Somebody just says that's a goddamn large shirt. The shirt is probably. I think the shirt may be representative of the size of its wearer. That's just a guess. The thing about the Impala, by the way, let me ask you this. I would say, as much as I'm given a, you know, maybe it's a bad rap. I don't know, but I associate the Impala often with, like a beer smuggling element in our society. The sleaziest car, though, if I were to ask you, the sleaziest mainstream American automobile, not necessarily something they're making right now, but I mean the American automobile you see on the road that you most equate with sleaze itself, apart from any decorations, apart from anything hanging from the rearview mirror, I'm talking about the actual make and model of car.
It depends on the type of sleaze. Like if I am thinking of your kind of mullety sleaze, I would say a Trans Am.
Okay, there's that, or maybe I was going to say the guy next door in Office Space, but that is a mullety kind of sleaze.
Or a really, really old Cadillac, like an early 80s Cadillac that, like, maybe it was brown once, but now it's starting to get that kind of weird oxidized brown color, but they're still, like, driving it around.
Somebody said exactly what I was going to say, which is that to me, there's no dispute about it. It's not even a close race. The sleaziest American car, the sleaziest mainstream American model car is the El Camino.
Oh, yeah.
You see an El Camino, you just know the guy behind the wheel. He's totally got like the weird, like they're not sunglasses. They're not really regular glasses. I guess you could argue that maybe they're prescription sunglasses, but they're really, really bad looking. And he's always got like the big Flanders mustache going on. And he's got this sort of, you know, he's got this sort of stubble, like the shadow, but not in like a, not in a carefully crafted, sexy kind of a way. Just sort of, he's been sleeping it off in a pile of his own sputum for a couple of days kind of way.
And the Ford version of that, the Ranchero.
Yes. Well, and he's often got like and it's a Western scene painted in the back window of the El Camino where it's like a sunset. And then there's a proud Indian silhouetted on the back of a horse. I always seem to be behind guys like that on the highway.
By the way, I noticed something here this morning. I read the story, the Alabama story, and then the story with the woman with the 18-pack of beer, Florida story. I do not go out of my way to, like, just look for specific Florida stories.
No, they present themselves.
And yet I have five stories
in
front of me today from Florida.
Well, it's not – look, we don't search for Florida stories because there's a Florida watch. There's a Florida watch because Florida stories present themselves all the time. I mean, there's a constant flow of Florida stories. And they're always – I mean, there has been – and that predates like even, even this show. I think it was – God, it might even been before Adam Carolla was the co-host. But back on Loveline, there used to be like this, they had a fixation on stories from Florida and or Germany. And then I think when Carolla took over, I think they started doing like a is it Florida or is it Germany
contest.
Yeah, I remember
that.
So Florida, I think Florida's been crazy for quite a long time. I think it's been known as a place where madness did dwell. I lied. Let's actually do one more here, and that'll bring us to about the bottom of the hour.
Well, here's another fine story from Florida.
That's fantastic.
A would-be robber got more than he bargained for when an 81-year-old Jacksonville man hit him upside the head with a frying pan. Bobby Smith told
us. Does it actually say upside the head?
It says in quotation marks.
Was this written by your mama?
Bobby Smith told officials he was working in his garden Saturday when caretaker Luvina Sons told him an intruder was in the house. Smith went to investigate. According to an arrest report, the armed suspect knocked Smith to the ground and took his wallet. Smith grabbed the nearest weapon, a frying pan full of fried potatoes. Smith hit the man, knocking some of his teeth out with the frying pan. He then used a nearby pitchfork to stick the robber in the side. Yes, apparently he had a pitchfork in his kitchen.
So this wasn't outside. They weren't fighting in a petunia patch.
No, he went into the house to investigate.
Maybe he was making like a whole mess of victuals, and really the regular fork wasn't doing the job tine wise.
The bleeding suspect. And Smith called for help. A canine unit found the suspect, who was arrested.
That's wonderful. He stabbed him in the side with a pitchfork.
81-year-old man first smacked him in the head with a frying pan full of potatoes. And then stabbed him with a pitchfork.
That's wonderful. All right. And so there you go. There's your Florida story. All right. We'll do this. We'll come back on the other side. We got your house recap still on the way. Greatest songs ever made. Taser watch. That is all headed to. Oh, and then I got this thing about. I should almost just do this here. That way we'll sort of have it done. And because you were talking about being kept away till like 4 a.m. or whatever, because you were doing the words with the Scrabble thing, the words with
and working on my book. I was writing.
Also working on your book and playing Scrabble, because that's usually two activities that go together really, really well simultaneously. It's hard to believe you're not making much progress.
And occasionally breaking to watch The Wire because I'm almost to the end of season two, and I'm trying. I can't wait to find out how it all shakes out because everyone started getting arrested.
No. I'm not criticizing. I'm the king of the multitask.
And
I'm just sort of
Ziggy turned himself in.
Yeah, that's what he does.
Oh,
did you already pass the point where he bought the coat?
That was way earlier.
Was that way earlier?
Season one.
Was
yeah.
it season? Yeah. I don't think Ziggy was in season one.
Yeah, he was.
Or was he?
Yeah, he was. And he had the horrible leather coat that he bought for a couple
of years. And he showed up and he's like, look at this.
Yeah.
And it was like, and he just, and the guy was,
and his cousin's going, you're supposed to keep a low profile.
His cousin Mikey or whatever his name is. And he's like, Zig, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And they live in that horrible, like, depressing, weird house with the mom who's all, which is not unlike Ziggy's family and Mikey's family, and that whole group of people on The Wire is... It is not too many steps removed from Michelle Forbes' family on The Killing. I mean, it's like you could sort of see that with like just a nudge in that direction. Those families would be very, very similar to one another. I forgot that he was in season one. I guess I didn't think that the Doc guys had actually made any appearance at all until season two.
Well, maybe it wasn't season one. I mean, maybe it was the very beginning of season two. It's just I've been watching this for so long. It seems like a really long time ago.
And all five seasons really do form one sort of tableau. I mean, it is like a, you know, they all...
You're right. It probably was. It was earlier in season one. It's just... Season two. It's just taken me a really long time to get through season two.
The Ziggy guy, he was on that show Generation Kill that David Simon did, which wasn't very good. And I don't know whether it's like a David Simon thing or whether it's a that actor thing, but he showed up in Generation Kill and was basically playing exactly the same character. And I believe got killed almost immediately, like in the second or third episode. So he's one of those guys, though, that like you just know that he gets cast as like the schnook because he just looks like that. I mean, it's like, which I guess, you know, like the character actor thing, but he's just like...
Talking about the guy who does the By War Van's Hammer thing in the Geek Watch. I looked him up on IMDb, and almost all of his credits are things like nerd at convention on CSI, or, you know, geek in comic book store on Law & Order, or something like that.
That's fantastic.
So apparently that's what he does.
Speaking of nerd stuff, now we're just... I'm yielding to the inevitable. We're not going to break it. well, because we got all this stuff to do and whatever and the whole thing and so... did you watch Game of Thrones?
Yes, if by watch you mean Patrick watched it and I was in the room at the time looking...
You were in the house while it was
looking
airing.
Up occasionally.
All right. And the verdict on it from Patrick was?
Patrick liked it quite a bit. It's been a long time since he read the first book in the series. But so far, he's enjoying it, and he thinks that the casting is good. I mean, it really is very pretty. It just seems to take itself so damn seriously, but it's...
Well, fantasy has no... See, this is the thing about fantasy that I think that I got over when I hit adolescence. I think it's the reason I quit reading it, is that fantasy has no... Fantasy has no acknowledgement of how ludicrous it is. Like, I'm not, you know, there's no acknowledgement inside that genre that, like, it's all just fundamentally absurd on some level. Which, and I'm not saying that it can't take itself seriously in terms of its craft and in terms of its execution. But, I mean, like, at some point, don't you just have to realize, like this is just sort of absurd?
I also just have, it's very weird to me watching something that it looks very Lord of the Ringsy with the everything misty and the guys running around and Sean Bean is one of the characters and he's running around in armor, and then they'll just be naked chicks, and that kind of shocks me because I get into that headspace of like I'm watching a fantasy thing, and so you get so used to watching like you know Chronicles of Narnia and Harry Potter and Lord of the Rings, and all of a sudden and so you kind of think it's going to be in that same sort of you know, G-rated realm, and then all of a sudden, naked chick humping Peter Dinklage, you know, and then, which is kind of strange, and then this one
humping Peter Dinklage actually sounds pretty great
of all people, and who is hot by the way, for he's the world's hottest dwarf, but then there's this blonde this characters, this blonde girl who Patrick assures me later turns into like a very strong central character. But right now she's just chattel and like has to marry this guy from like this barbarian tribe so that their kingdoms can be thing. And she's all sad because now she has to mate with the guy. And it's this dreadlocked guy.
Did they actually use the word mate?
Well, I guess because like she has to marry him and it's like a forced marriage and it's like you must do this for our kingdoms because they have I don't know. I wasn't paying all that much attention. But she's like pale to the point of like with the white blonde hair and the pale skin like she's some kind of albino. And then they marry her off to the young stud guy from the barbarian tribe who is the dreadlocked alien fellow from one of those Stargate shows. And then there's this whole thing. They get married, and then they go someplace, and they're standing on the rocks by the shore. And he starts touching her and taking her clothes off. And then he just bends her over and does her, like standing there on the rocks.
Well, I mean, if you're a barbarian, you can pretty much make your own law.
While she's
like.
Weeping. And I'm just going, that's unpleasant.
Well, that's just hot. Oop.
Well,
sorry.
Yeah. It was hot and unpleasant at the same time.
Gender divide. Hello.
Plus, I just kept thinking, why on the rocks?
Yeah, well, that was like when you watch the like the first time you watched 300. And there's that whole thing where, like, I don't know, where he's like humping it out with Leonidas or whatever. He's like humping it out with or am I confusing it? With Leonidas, who's the, you know, this is Sparta. You
know,
that guy. He's, you know, he's a bit Gerard Butler. It's like humping it out with, like, his m'lady, you know, and it's like there's weird, like, you know, like they're being surrounded by the mist ghost, from the Ghostbusters or something, and they're all, and he's, you know, everything is like being shot through this weird blue filter, and it's like he's, you know, and he's, she's, you know, and he's pulling like her metal breastplate off, and it's all hot or whatever, but it's all just like strangely awkward and embarrassing. Fantasy sex is all really, and by fantasy I mean like sword and sorcery sex, is really, really off-putting to me, and really just, and really cringe-inducing. I'm not. It's not like I'm just embarrassed by sex scenes or just whatever in general. Fantasy sex scenes are always embarrassing because you just, because you feel like you're just getting a, like you're looking through a window into the creator's like frustrated 14-year-old self.
Yes.
And you're just like, oh, yes. This is what someone was dreaming about when he was sitting alone at home in 1989. So that is, which is, and when you mention like Harry Potter and Lord of the Rings and being relatively chaste and so forth, I think those movies are the exception. I think that's why I think like Chronicles of Narnia and Lord of the Rings sort of break through, because they are the exception to that rule. Because most fantasy, at least in my experience, does tend to dwell more on like the heavy metal magazine side of things. Mm-hmm. Where all the women are possessed of these large grapefruit-like breasts, and they all have like a, like they do have like some weird voluminous Wonder Bra metallic shield thing they have to wear, like a Valkyrie style.
Well, this thing, the first each part of this is an hour. I'm not sure how many sections of it there are, but the first part was an hour. And I asked Pat, I said, so how much of the book did they actually get to in all of this? Because it seems like an awful lot of stuff happened. And he said, oh, this is like two chapters. I was like, really?
Yeah. No, that's so. That's it. There are no brief fantasy novels either. That's the, and here, let me ask you this. I'm not trying to start a whole thing, but you know, it seems like that. It seems like we're past that point in many, many ways today. So I'm not trying to start like a whole argument or something. Not even an argument. It's just I am not trying to provoke or instigate anybody. And by anybody, I don't even mean you. I just mean people, because I've asked this question before, and I forget where I was. I raised this question. Innocently enough, I thought, at one point several years ago, and I was immediately on the receiving end of like a bunch of excoriations from people who said that I was, you know, who felt that I would, that it was a loaded question.
Okay.
And I just asked, why do all of these, I'll put it this way, why don't any of these fantasy epics take place in like Africa, you know, or an Africa type nation? Why is it always in England? Always, always in a place filled with lily white people. And then now over the last, over recent years, they've started to work in what I feel to be a sort of tokenistic approach to people who aren't white. But let's be honest. I mean, let's just call it what it is. The fantasy epics always take place in some like Aryan paradise. What is up with that?
I think it's just that they're just very Anglo-centric because of the writers. I mean, there's a lot of a year or so back, I remember there being a lot of heavy, heavy discussion about this among people in the science fiction community and like on live journal and on message boards and that sort of thing.
Live journal.
Yeah. Well, an awful lot of science fiction fans and writers have live journal blogs and crossover into discussions. And there was every once in a while these discussions will erupt about white privilege in science fiction and fantasy novels, because there's this belief, much like when David Walker was writing his book and trying to sell it, and he was being told, well, boys don't read fantasy.
Right.
There's this belief that people of color don't read science fiction and fantasy. And it's not strictly true, but it's also the fact that there's also that thing of people of color turn around and say, why should I? How am I reflected? You know, how do I relate to the people in these grossly Anglo-centric books? And
well, to be fair, I don't really know that I relate to anybody in Lord of the Rings.
Yeah,
no one does. It's fantasy.
Well, yeah, and I
no one alive anywhere relates to Lord of the Rings. That's the whole. I mean, that it seems like. See, that to me, that's a ridiculous counterargument, though, because it's like that's. But it's a fantasy by definition. Something that is fantasy is not relatable to most people. I mean, you know, unless you're a warlord living, you know, in outer Mongolia right now, it seems like seems like the Chronicles of Narnia is not really a thing that is relatable to most people.
Oh, no. I mean, and I can't say that I don't have any horse in this race. I don't have any opinion on either side of it. I'm just saying that the discussion does come up, and it comes up, and it's very hotly argued on both sides often, because the vast majority of writers of science fiction and fantasy are white people, and they tend to write books about white people. And the characters, even when they're space explorers and, you know, this is taking place in the future, the vast majority of them are, you know, black people, are white people.
Is there this idea somehow that white people won't watch something that doesn't star or, you know, read something that doesn't star other white people? Where the characters – I can't read that. The characters aren't white.
To a certain extent, yeah.
I mean, I guess
The Hunger Games was a hugely popular trilogy, and they're making a movie out of it now, and it's been cast with – The character was only very briefly described as having, I believe, like almond-colored skin or one of those things like what do you call it?
Olive-colored
skin, yeah. in the first book, implying that she was of
Mediterranean.
Mediterranean. But that was the only description given of her. But they've cast a white girl in the book. There have been issues recently, just this last couple of years, of books that actually have black or Hispanic female lead characters for young adult audiences, where they actually illustrate the cover with a white girl.
Well, see, and I'm not – I mean, but to me, I'm not disputing that as such, but I'm saying to me that's almost a separate issue. That's not whether people won't read or watch something that has a black protagonist. That is a decision made – that's the corporation or the company doing that. So I can – in other words, I can believe – that the marketing or PR department at some, you know, or I can believe that a studio executive or that somebody who is developing a project, I can believe that at some point, you know, some consultant comes in and goes, no, you got to change the cover to be a white person. I can believe that. I'm talking about the actual audience, though. Like, if there is, you know, sure, there's going to be some dick in the marketing department who will tell you you got to change it. But I mean, I wonder if that's. I mean, I like to think that that's not actually true of the audience, don't like to think that it's true of the sci-fi or fantasy audience. And I'm not saying it is.
I don't think it's – I mean, obviously, it's not some kind of deliberate conspiracy or anything. I think it's just a matter of – it all kind of feeds itself. Most writers of this fiction are – and of these projects – are white. Most of their readers have traditionally been white. Publishers go, well, I guess the audience, the people who buy these books are white, so we will keep like making stuff about, you know, about these faux European countries and stuff rather than there's one writer, I was looking this up to get the name of it, a writer named Stephen Barnes. He actually lives in Vancouver, and he's written a lot of novels some really, really terrific novels. And he wrote a book that was, if I could find it, two books, one called Lion's Heart and one called Zulu Heart. And he himself is a black science fiction fantasy writer. And those books actually take place. He did an alternate history novel about what would in a world where Islamic Africa rose up as the center of technological advancement rather than Europe. And then so he just came up with this whole different thing with a different, you know, calendar and
right.
White people were the enslaved race and black people were, you know, in charge of everything. And it was really fascinating is because the whole idea of how different would the world be culturally if instead of European countries being like, you know, the predominant culture in the world, if Africa had come to prominence first. And you know, but that's again, that's really unusual. Most of this stuff is like, you know, they're like with the George R. R. Martin stuff, this Game of Thrones. It's all, you know, like Hobbit land.
Well, that's the thing.
It's alternate versions of England.
And I'm not criticizing or passing judgment. In other words, there's nothing to me. I should be very clear about this. It's not like I think that there's anything wrong with Game of Thrones or, you know, or Lord of the Rings or Chronicles of Narnia or Stephen R. Donaldson, or you know, Dragonlance, or you know, whatever the hell it is, you're gonna, whatever it is, I have no issue with that. Like, in other words, the absence of the absence of black-based fantasy, you know, literature doesn't therefore mean that the stuff that is like pseudo-Elizabethan or pseudo, you know, that is obviously an analog to European culture. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that.
I'm just wondering if it goes back to the fact that all of this stuff ultimately stems from, you know, Wells and adventure novels like Last of the Mohicans and all of that stuff, you know, and your early stories like, you know, the Round Table, Knights of the Round Table, which the Les Morts d'Arthur, which was French. And if like all of that early stuff, which is probably the genesis of fantasy fiction, all of that stuff basically came from Europeans.
Well, Tolkien had this whole thing when he wrote Lord of the Rings. Tolkien wrote Lord of the Rings because, and I've never understood this statement, Tolkien wrote Lord of the Rings because he had always regretted that England didn't have, you know, didn't have any great myths and stories. And it seems like, you know, maybe England as he lived in it didn't. But I mean, you're kind of in the center of the whole thing there.
But he postdates Chaucer and
that's what I'm saying. It doesn't make any sense. The idea that, you know, that he said that a lot. He was, you know, it's like, well, I feel bad that England doesn't have any great myths of its own. I'm like, what do you, you know, huh? To me, that's like a willful overlooking of history. So again, it's not like I have any issue with that stuff. The absence of its opposite number doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with it. I have asked that question out of simple curiosity in the past. And I have sort of, you know, and not a lot, but I have had certain that people then that it is then sort of assumed that I am saying that, you know, that most sci-fi fantasy is racist. And I don't think it's racist. I do wonder why it is so monochromatic. And maybe,
I think it is slowly changing for the same reason it once was also predominantly a male preoccupation as well. I mean, when I was 15, I used to go to a science fiction science fiction and comic book convention that took place once a month in Los Angeles. And I would often be the only female in the place. And women have found themselves more and more, you know, comfortable with and embraced by, you know, the geek community as well as science fiction. I know a fair amount of women that grew up reading science fiction. But when I first started going with some of my geekier friends to Oricon here in Portland, there had to have been something probably like a good 6-to-1 ratio of males to females in the place. And now I'd say it's probably, you know, fairly evenly matched. But you still, again, I don't know what it's like if you go to someplace like Worldcon, but here in Oregon, Portland is very, very white, and we are still drawing a lot of people to Norwest Con in Seattle and to Oricon here. You're drawing geeks from the Northwest, and the Northwest is very white. But you don't see a lot of brown faces. You really don't. It does seem to be, you know, it just is. It's not a matter, I think, of it being racist. It's just kind of risen up that way. Geeks love England. Geeks love medieval England and dragons and knights and royalty and crap.
And see, and that's the thing. I am not saying it's racist, but it is. But it's not racist, but it does seem to be racial. In other words, there is a race divide there, whether or not it comes. And I'm not saying it comes from anything malicious. That there's no pejorative intent there. But to say that something is racial, the thing you just pointed out, that you go to like Dragon Con. And it's like, you know, it's a pretty pale group of people. And again, I'm not saying that is a thing that springs from any sort of bigotry. I don't believe that it does. But you can't deny that whatever the reason for it, that divide is there, just like the male-female divide is there and, you know, less than it used to be. But it still is very pronounced. And I'm not saying it's necessarily because of sexism either. But it is a gender-based difference, even if it's not an actual bias as such, as we understand that
word.
And
the thing is, a lot of these stories, if the genre as a whole isn't Eurocentric, it is very Euro-prominent.
Yeah. It's a thing that I, and it's for better minds than mine to figure out. I mean, that's a thing that I'm not smart enough to ever sort of figure out what the underpinnings of all that.
I've never been able to get anybody to explain to me what the attraction is of high functioning Asperger's people to science fiction and fantasy. Because you go to cons, you go to bookstores, and again, I'm not you know, disparaging these people. I know some lovely people who have Asperger's.
Many of my best friends have Asperger's.
But the thing is, there does seem to be a real attraction.
The people I know, I would say, and I'm not a doctor, of course, but the people I know that I would that I would casually diagnose, that I would improvisationally diagnose as being as having some of those traits, as being a little autistic. In my experience, I don't know that those folks gravitate to fantasy, but they do gravitate to sci-fi, and I think that's because sci-fi, a lot of sci-fi.
Hard science fiction?
Yeah, exists in a world where things they function in a binary kind of way. The best example I can give is this. I'll explain it this way. The people I know that I would say that kind of fall into the maybe, you know, is that guy really smart or does he have Asperger's or both? They tend to be Star Trek fans, not Star Wars fans. In other words, they tend to be nerds, not geeks. Because I think fantasy kind of is its own thing. It exists off in its own weird fuzzy realm. But I find that and again, these are just general broad observations. This is obviously there are a lot of crossover, but generally speaking, Star Wars is geeky and Star Trek is nerdy. And so the people I know that tend to have those personality traits in spades tend to be drawn to Star Trek because Star Trek is a very hard-edged, very squared-off program in terms of its writing, in terms of its delivery, in terms of its, no pun intended, in terms of its logic, and in terms of the way it's not swashbuckling. I mean, there's a little bit of that with Kirk, but the show itself is very... It is a very
logical.
It's just that the show does exist as a series of very squared off component parts, as opposed to Star Wars, which is fantastical in a way that it doesn't necessarily follow its own internal rules. And Star Trek doesn't all the time either. But yeah, it's hard science fiction as opposed to they tend to be much more Asimov than they do Bradbury, because I think one of those has a sort of amorphous approach and one of them has a very dogmatic approach to the future and to life and to health. Science fiction, hard science fiction, and I guess we could argue about what that means, but I think hard science fiction, again, your Asimov, this is the nerdiest goddamn conversation. Okay. I'm sorry we were snarking at each other earlier, Don, but it's good that we found this on which we can all agree. This is the thing that's brought us together. But your hard science fiction, which is, again, like your Isaac Asimov stuff versus what I would call your Bradbury school, which is where it does, it has a more humanistic element to it. I would say that stuff exists in a world as it ought to exist, or it exists in a world which is formed in a way that is probably more pleasing to people who have that sort of view of life, a view that is very black and white, and no pun intended, and very, very ones and zeros, that they probably find a lot of – it's very comforting to read things that cast the world in that way. And also, this can't be denied, that a lot of hard sci-fi as opposed to soft sci-fi, a lot of hard sci-fi is, just as a lot of fantasy is very humorless. There's just not a lot of like, hey, this is all kind of dumb and great, but dumb. Whereas you get a sense with Star Wars type sci-fi at its better moments that there is a sort of not even a kitschiness. It's not winking and acknowledging. It's not like it's not like they're making fun of themselves, but they are acknowledging the inherent sort of fun and the inherent sort of awesome silliness of it, or the silly awesomeness of it.
I wonder if that's also why certain personalities who like science fiction fantasy like Terry Pratchett and Piers Anthony, because puns are a very specific kind of humor that even someone who has maybe a little bit of trouble grasping subtle humor will get wordplay.
Yeah.
They'll get puns.
Well, and there's a little bit of elasticity in the prose and the tone there, as opposed to the sort of inflexible, and totally non-self-analytical or self-aware approach of something like your harder science fiction. And I don't even know that I can speak to that with any degree of authority because by definition, I don't read a lot of hard sci-fi at this point in my life, just like I don't read a lot of fantasy. I sort of drifted away from that when I hit adolescence. Which is strange because when you look at a lot of the music that I listened to in adolescence, I mean, it was listening to a lot of Led Zeppelin, so it seems like I should have been, you know, and they're just a bunch of, you know, they're a bunch of troll-fighting, you know, idiots in some ways. But, you know, I don't know.
There's a very specific kind of fantasy that Patrick and I always laugh about because we have a friend who her longtime best friend is actually a very successful fantasy writer, and she gave us some of her books once. And after reading her books and looking at the covers of her books, there's a whole genre of it now that Patrick and I just refer to as, you know, The books with the lady in the fur bikini with the telepathic wolves.
Yeah. Yeah. They all look like they're a lot of those books look like they take place in those Rolling Stone print commercials for like Goldschlager vodka or whatever, where it's like the Valkyrie riding over the hill on a polar bear. And she's got like wielding like a huge sword and then like a goblet made out of a skull covered with rubies in the other hand. So I'm not passing judgment. People can read whatever they want to read. I mean, if you just want to sit and read Orville Redenbacher's Slash Lit, like, I don't care. Have at it. But I am just curious as to how those things. It is the sort of the sociological and sociogender issues and things like various strata of American culture and how they intersect or don't intersect sometimes.
Well, there are a few things more entertaining and at the same time deeply frustrating than reading online science fiction fans who, for the most part, are very articulate but also tend to be like very verbose arguing about an issue like this, because it's really hard to get people to just step back and just go, look, it's if it is sort of Caucasian centric, it's not necessarily because it's some kind of big conspiracy to keep black folks out.
It's just the way that it is for whatever reason.
But the other direction that argument took, particularly most recently when people were fighting about it, was also that should therefore you as a white author, should you write more characters that are of color, or should you not, because you don't know what their experience actually is?
Inauthentic. You don't want to front. Yeah. Which is I'll just read this without. And I'll read this without the comment, at least. I'll read it all the way through to the end, and I won't, without editing. Because I was about to say, well, Don, the black perspective is – but rather than do that, because that would be absurd, I'll – so Keelan typed this long, long series of observations. So let's see. He starts off by saying, I hear white people bitching all the time about shows with too many black people in it by saying, and at first when I read that, and I'm already breaking my own rule by interrupting, but at first I thought, well, that's not true. But then he says something which I have heard a million times, where he says, he will hear people say, oh, is that a black show or is that a black movie? Which, and that is a thing you hear sometimes. You will hear things, inadvertently ghettoized by white people by just saying, oh, yeah, that's that black show with the whole, and things are created for different target audiences. I mean, there's no getting around that. I mean, there's a reason why marketers and focus groups and consultants exist. But I do think that is a thing that is a description that is sometimes used when it's not accurate and when it's not. I heard Homicide described as being a black show for a long time. Well,
yeah,
and Homicide. Wow. I don't think Homicide is created for. I don't think that's created for any particular audience. I don't think it's created. I don't think it. I think it was just created. I think Homicide was one of those shows that was created with that cast makeup because it takes place in Baltimore, which is an overwhelmingly black city. Anyway, but he says. He does clarify. He says at least I heard that a lot in Vegas, not so much in Portland. He continues, historically, black people are used to and / tired of being left out of TV, movies, et cetera, that they will actively become annoyed with shows and other things that do not have black people in it. He said kids hear their parents bitching about it on a Wednesday night. They grow up thinking the same way when they start watching TV and going to see films. He says, my love, because he's, I mean, let's just be honest, Keelan's like second to no one in his nerdality. He says, my love of sci-fi / fantasy supersedes the lack of black characters, but it would be better if I thought black people survived to see the future. Lol. He said, no bigotry. Black people are just make up such a small portion of the population. Imagine how outcast and few their numbers are within the black community itself, black geeks. So it's like the minority of a minority. He said, if you started as a young geek in the black community to get peer pressure to get out of that and get back into baseball, if you start out as a young geek in the black community to get peer pressure to get out of that and to get back into basketball, rap videos, jewelry, Jordans, and chasing bitches, not to mention your parents bitching at you to grow up and join the real world so you can get a job. He concludes by saying, to maintain as a black geek, you have to have a fairly strong personality and a sense of independence to ignore the tide of the rest of your counterparts.
Although, to be fair, I don't think that Keelan has given up chasing bitches.
No, of course. Of course not, except... Where is this? He said the greatest thing, and I put this – I wrote this in my iPhone. Let's see. He said this when we were at the Sleep Country Pajama Bowl. on March 13th at 1:22 p.m. Because, you know, so he's living with Nibbler right now. So he moved up from Vegas. So Nibbler and Keelan are living together, which just seems like a sitcom in the offing. Nibbler and the Low. Fridays. I don't know if I asked him if he was like, you know, I don't know. I don't know how this came up, but he had just moved in. I don't think most of his stuff had arrived yet. And he actually just said, Rick, you can't have single ladies over on an air mattress, which really is that is really one of life's essential truths right there. That is one of the eternal verities in this world. So, God damn, this show's gotten all serious. Let's go back to making dick jokes.
Okay.
All right. We really honestly are going to take a break here. And it's just because I have all this urine and something's got to be done about it. Well, you know how that goes, Dawn.
Yes, I have had that happen to me myself on occasion.
Talk show hosts be peeing. So, or they will be. So we'll get to that here in just a second. You were listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. So we'll come back on he says, hell yeah, I'm chasing a bitch right now. So just.
Well, good luck with that, sir.
Be warned, everyone. And this is all true. So we'll do this. We'll come back on the other side. We got the house recap to get to. We still have a taser watch to do. And we'll do another installment of the greatest songs ever made. You are listening to the Rick Emerson radio program right here on the Emerson News Network. Go nowhere.
For years in this industry, whenever an African-American character, hero or villain, was introduced, usually by white artists and writers, they got slapped with racist names that singled them out as Negroes. The black man's no longer going to play the minstrel in the medium of comics and sci-fi fantasy. We keeping it real. And we going to get respect by any means necessary.
Come on. That's a bunch of horse Lando Calrissian was a black guy, you know. He got to fly the Millennium Falcon. What's the matter with you?
Who said that?
I did. Lando Calrissian is a positive role model in the realm of science fiction fantasy.
Lando Calrissian, Uncle Tom. Always some white boy got to invoke the Holy Trilogy. Bust this. Those movies are about how the white man keeps the brother man down, even in a galaxy far, far away. Check this shit. You got cracker farm boy Luke Skywalker, Nazi poster boy, blonde hair, blue eyes. And then you got Darth Vader, the blackest brother in the galaxy, Nubian God.
What's a Nubian?
Shut the fuck up. Now, Vader, he's a spiritual brother, you know, down with the Force and all that good shit. Then there's Cracker, Skywalker. Gets his hands on a lightsaber, and the boy decides he's gonna run the f***ing universe. Gets a whole clan of whites together. And they gonna bust up Vader's hood, the Death Star. Now, what the f*** do you call that?
Intergalactic Civil War?
Gentrification! They gonna drive out the black element to make the galaxy, quote, unquote, safe for white folks.
And Jedi's the most insulting installment
because Vader's beautiful black visage is sullied when he pulls off his mask to reveal a feeble, crusty old white man. They trying to tell us that deep inside, we all wants to be white.
Well, isn't that true?
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
or you choke. It don't matter if you drink or smoke. Speak through the beat, get up on your feet. Sweating like a hound dog, white as a sheet. Don't you be sad, don't you be scared. Everybody terrified, it don't seem bad. What are you waiting for? What do you think you were created for? Hurry your seat, lying in the heat. Do the dusty monkey mama stop your feet. Born to raise hell, born to raise hell. We know how to do it and we do it real well. Born to raise hell, born to raise hell. Come back to zero, take your fill and get well. Born to raise hell, born to raise hell. Be a good soldier and die where you fell. It's your hammer.
News Network.
Thank you. simple man.
I'm like Sam the Butcher, bringing Alice to me. Like Fred Flintstone,
driving around with both feet.
Should I have another ship now? Skippy.
In the back of the ride,
and bust with the whippet. Rope with old bookies all around the neck.
Wow, got the mole of the jack.
Running from the law, the press and the parents.
Is your name Michael Diamond?
No, mine's Clarence.
From downtown
Manhattan,
the village. My style's wild, and you know that it's stealing.
This snow bag's ripping, and you're doing the buzz.
Shake your rope.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Everybody, we happen to know that Dawn and I made out during the break. You are listening to the Rick Emerson Radio. Hold on. Now all the makeup is gone from here down on my face. You're listening to the Rick Emerson Radio program. Thank you for joining us. It is Tuesday, April 19th, 2011. Still to come, we got your house recap. Also another installment of Greatest Songs Ever Made. And Taser Watch and so forth. So, wait, hold on. See, now because of a confluence of, like, Keelan's whole thing and then something I was talking about, like, I don't know, yesterday or the day before with Aaron Duran, I was going to say, where's my visa? But now I just want to say everything like that guy from a Hollywood show, where's my bitches? Which now sounds like the guy at the mall, too. The whole thing. You remember Hollywood Shuffle? It was like the Night of the Living Dead, but it was like the Night of the Living Pimps or something. And where's my bitches?
Yes.
I should not say that a lot.
I ate begots no weapon.
He was my brother. My only brother. I'm so glad that we have the studio where we can do those things, because it's not a thing we could do in polite company, like just out in the world. All right. Anywho. Okay. Everybody, I know I just had like 8 minutes and two Motorhead songs during which I could have done this, but everybody just hold on a second. I got to drink me some Vizo. Hold on 1 second here. Let me just... Yes?
It's like that's the sound of it going down your throat.
This is the sound that would accompany Bob Ross as he was making a, tiny little happy clouds of Vizo inside my stomach.
Happy little trees.
All right, there we go. Awesome. Excellent. All right, so that is all on the way. We got the your Taser Watch house update, greatest songs ever made, and so forth. So we'll get to all that in a second. This thing that I was going to say at the beginning of the show, and then we got distracted by a thing inside a thing, and then it went to another deal. I guess you were talking about not being able to sleep because you were up working on the book, and then also like you had the words with friends or the Scrabble thing or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so that just led me to this, and I think I'm probably not the only one having this problem, but. Goddamn Facebook. And it's not like I complain about Facebook, like, all the time. Like, I try not to be one of those guys who's like, and then another thing with Facebook. I read, actually, there was a really, really great article this morning that I saw on Dig. And I'm going to post it, I think, later on. But it was basically a guy, I don't know, whether anybody agrees with him or not. I do, but you don't have to. But he laid out a really, really great argument about, he's like, if you're not on Facebook as, like, you're taking some sort of a stand by not being on Facebook. He was basically just saying, like, shut up. And his whole thing was like, it was like those people who were like, I'm never getting a cell phone. And he's like, you know, everybody hates that guy.
Yeah.
Because, you know, all you're doing is willfully making it more difficult for people to get in touch with you. And he said, for good or bad, whether you like it or not, things evolve. And he's like, this is how humans are now communicating. He's like, it used to be that we would just like have cave paintings and hit drums and bang sticks and like have smoke signals and, you know, carrier pigeons. And then it was telegraph. Then it was telephone. Then it was cell phone. It's like, now it's Facebook. It's like, that's just the way it is. You don't have to like it, but you should at least acknowledge that technology marches. He did also point out something else, which is that I hadn't really thought about this. He pointed out something that I think is really true. He said a lot of people who are really, really who are anti-Facebook, it's strange because a lot of the people who really, really actively snark about Facebook or make a big deal about not being on it. And we know, you know, I know people like that. I think Seamus actually canceled his Facebook account because he felt it was taking up too much of his time. But he said he, in his experience, a lot of people who complain about Facebook and are willfully like making a stand about not being on Facebook are people who, by all rights, ought to embrace technological advances. And they are the ones who actually say, but mom, you've got to get a computer because everybody needs it. You need a computer. You know, a computer is not just, you know, it's not just a thing that you play on which you play Oregon Trail. A computer is massively useful. He would be the guy who's in the commercial trying to tell his mom why she should be on, you know, why she should get CompuServe because it's, you know, it's a highway to the world of tomorrow today. And yet so there's some of the same people who are refusing to acknowledge that humankind has advanced and evolved. And that is how things are now being done. It's sort of a willful disregard of evolution.
Well, there are people who also just have different ways of communicating and have a hard time adapting to others. And so far to this point, they don't have to. I know some people who are on Facebook who aren't on Twitter. I know people who use Twitter but aren't on Facebook. And I'd heard one of the pop culture editors at NPR talking about it on a podcast, and in his opinion, he said that it seemed like Twitter is about language because he hates Facebook, but he likes Twitter very much. He said he thinks Twitter is about language and Facebook is about people.
Yeah.
And he didn't want to spend any more time with people, and he doesn't like people very much. But, you know, he liked just writing little things and reading little things that people wrote. And so he likes Twitter very much, but just doesn't want to go through the whole social networking aspect of Facebook. On the other hand, though, I know people who just can't stand Twitter. They just don't like it. They think it's just too scattershot and too quick and too shallow or something. But they really like the more, like, sort of, I guess they see it as a more immersive experience of Facebook with pictures and people being able to comment back and forth on things. And, you know, so I think it's a matter of people adapting at their own pace to the changes that are happening. I mean, I was the first of I have a group of friends, and I was one of the first of my friends to be involved in any of this stuff. You know, I set us up with a Google group email account like 15, 17 years ago so we could all like communicate through email. I was the first of my friends to be on Facebook, you know, and everyone was like, I don't get what this Facebook thing is. And then eventually, you know, most of them have sort of, you know, straggled on over.
Well, that was me. I got on Facebook because Sarah was the one who actually was sort of the canary in the coal mine for me on that because she was the one who told me I didn't know what Facebook or what MySpace was and she told me about it. And then she was the one who's like, no, it's no longer about. First it was MySpace, then it was like you had to do both. And then we all sort of transitioned to Facebook and Twitter, and I wouldn't have known about any of that stuff but her. And I was for there was a while where I sort of dragged because there was a time when I was I'm not going to get a cell phone guy, but you just can't, like, at a certain point you just have to acknowledge, I think, especially depending on what you do for a living or, you know, how your job or your life requires interaction with other people. You just can't be the guy who's not reachable or can't be found through the mechanism most people use.
No, you can't look down your nose at the guy working on his laptop at the coffee house anymore.
Right. Yeah.
Because that's all of us.
Yeah, and if it's not you, then it really is in a large way, it is to your detriment. I mean, unless you really are just going to be some Thoreau who just, you know, you're just going to go live in a cabin somewhere, which, you know, is fine. But, you know, the thing is, like, people don't really do that. The idea that, like, you know, I'm going to stay pure and I'm just, you know, I'm going to communicate with people organically. But you really don't do that. If you have a telephone or a television, you're not allowed to bitch about Facebook.
I still reserve the right to hate guys who walk around with big Bluetooth things on their ears all the time, even when, you know, they aren't expecting a phone call.
Well, that's my...
They're, like, like the grocery store and Powell's.
And
or
I have no reason to hate that, but I do. Like, if I could just get the Fahrenheit 451 thing, where it's just a little thing that goes in my ear that no one can see. Like, I don't mind. Like, I'll wear the big ass, the stupid headset, you know, sometimes. And I have this, like, well, the thing I use for the voice dictation, where it's like the John Madden. It's like the ears and the microphone. That, and if I had that, or like that's so big it actually doesn't bother me because it sort of like calls attention to itself by being hideous. So it's like I'm not trying to look slick with that because you just look because you look dumb wearing that thing. Or the thing that is so small you can't see it, I can get with either of those. The little stylish, sleek Bluetooth thing is right in the middle, and it's like the worst of all worlds. It's like it's not small enough to be invisible, but it's big enough to, you know, to be clunky and to make it look as though you are drawing attention to how important you are. Even if you're not really trying to do that, that's what it looks like. That, to me, that's like people who – and this is a thing that I agree with the guy. To me, that is like people who are constantly complaining about the privacy aspect of Facebook, like as though you're so interesting, you know, that people just can't wait to have you. You know, that you are one of like 600 million people. You're not. No one cares what you're doing. No one.
Yeah, and you're on the internet.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like they're going, forget these other people. That guy, though, we got to harvest information because he's a little snowflake of a human being. You're just not. But I will say this about Facebook. Facebook is not without its issues. It does have its problems. And like one of the things is like that, as much as I don't really give it the privacy thing, it does bother me that they are constantly changing their functionality underneath us without really telling us, which means that suddenly I start getting messages and like, you know, an alert and things popping up and just like – so I did this thing, which I don't regret as such, but I did this thing where I enabled I set it up so that Facebook would text me if I got certain kinds of messages, not all of them. And my whole thing was it wasn't like if somebody posted on the wall or somebody tagged me. I set it up so that if somebody sent me a direct message on Facebook, I got an alert about it. Just because – and that's a thing that, I didn't want to do it. But recently I missed – it was like missing an important phone call. Recently it was like I would just – I noticed that I had missed some kind of important messages because people just – that was their primary method of getting a hold of me.
And also because Facebook just did a thing where they buried – the direct messages somewhere as well, because that happened to me last week where I went looking for something and discovered that I had like five, you know, DMs
just
on Facebook
sitting
just sitting there. And because it rather than it coming up on my wall or whatever it is, it got buried into this message section instead.
Well, now they've also added the email service. So it's like Facebook has its own email. So that's only going to get worse where people like that is their, you know, that is their primary and preferred. And actually a couple of them, it's like people sent me messages on Facebook and then they actually never followed it up with a regular email or a phone call. They assumed sent me it on Facebook that I would see it. So I was like, well, I can't be missing messages. So I set my phone up so now when I get a direct, you know, when I get a message directly sent to me at Facebook, it sends me a text message saying, Don Taylor sent you the following message on Facebook 4 minutes ago, and it's like, you know, the direct message. Except my phone just started vibrating like every 30 seconds, and I'm like, well, I'm not that popular. What is going on? And I look over, and so I'm like, okay, well, it had somehow been set up. This is the frustrating thing about Facebook. So my phone is vibrating constantly, and I think, well, whether I can't be getting that many messages. What is going on? And so what was happening was that Facebook was sending me to my phone. They were sending me text messages to alert me to, like, anything. It was like a tag, a post on the wall, a response to a post on the wall, a friend request. And I was like, well, I don't want to get a text message every time anything happens on Facebook. So I do what we all have to do like once every like 3 weeks. I go to Facebook. And there is a point to the story. I log because I'm not the only one dealing with this. So I log into Facebook. I go to notifications. And in the notification section of Facebook now, there's actually two columns. There's a be notified by email, be notified by text. And for every single thing that they can alert you for, a wall post, a birthday announcement, a poke, a tag, a request, a confirmation, or whatever, you can either check to have it sent to your email, have it sent to your text message, have it sent to both, or have it sent to neither. So I went through and I unchecked every single thing that was a alert me by text except for direct messages. Unchecked everything else, double checked it, save changes, went back, changes saved, all I'm getting. 5 minutes later, phone starts vibrating because, again, I'm getting so-and-so posted a comment about your clown photo. And then so-and-so posted a follow-up to the guy. I'm like, what the hell? And I go back into Facebook. And the settings have just, they've reverted themselves. And I thought, well, what the, okay, so I went and unchecked everything again. Checking it, okay, all I'm going to get text messages for is direct messages. Save. Double checked it. Okay, same thing again. So then I go online, and apparently now this has become the problem with Facebook, that if you opt in to have text messages into your phone, there is some sort of a glitch in, like, randomly, like, half the Facebook accounts, and there seems to be no rhyme or reason. Sometimes it's a BlackBerry, sometimes it's an iPhone, sometimes it's an Android-based phone. Like, half the Facebook accounts, and they can't figure out why. There is some glitch to where these settings just randomly reorder themselves or revert to where you get message for everything. So I had to turn it off altogether. So I say that hoping that somebody has found a fix, because I went online this morning. Here's the thing that happens. Do you do this where you get some problem with your phone or your computer? There are few better feelings in our modern world than when you go online and you type in your problem and then Google auto-completes it and you see that like 9 zillion people. Because how many times have you taken your car into the shop and the guy goes, lady, it's not making any noise. And you go, it was just making the noise this morning. Oh, it'll do it again.
Yeah. Coincidentally, that's what I'm going through right now is I think the problem, one of the problems with my car is that I need transmission fluid and I can't find the dipstick thing, which is also the place where the transmission fluid goes in.
Right.
So I'm going online and Google auto completes. Where is the transmission fluid thing? It's like nobody knows where the transmission fluid thing is on their car, particularly on my car, and nor can I find it.
Yeah, well, that's...
I'm going to have to, like, drive it to a place and actually look like an idiot and ask a guy, can you tell me where the thing is for my transmission fluid?
But at the very least, you know that you're not, like, hallucinating it. You know that you're not... He's not going to go, it's right here on top.
Right.
You know, because you went online and they
did. It's a very common problem among people of all makes and models and years of cars is not being able to find the damn transmission fluid dipstick.
Well, and more importantly, it's also he's not going to be able to go, well, little lady, let me just show you.
Everybody knows where that is.
Well, it's like that's a thing they've done with the with my car. There is now because I got the thing where like the driver's side ass warmer doesn't work, like the heated seat doesn't work on the driver's side. And I'm like, well, you know, because I was all impressed with myself that I was able to replace a fuse, you know, for my cigarette lighter or something. I'm like, I'll just replace every fuse. I'll replace fuses aplenty while I'm here. But apparently Ford has cleverly done this thing where the one fuse that you can't access from the fuse box is the thing to fix the seat warmers. Literally, it's like under the hood, like behind the carburetor, inside like a thing, inside a vault, inside like a lockbox, inside, you know, like Al Capone's spleen, inside something. It's like hidden. And everybody was like, the guy's like, the guy said, I'm actually a mechanic and I can't get to it with any of my tools. So on the one hand, that sucks. But on the other hand, you go, it's not me, thank God. So if anybody out there, and I said this is personal, just totally at a personal interest, if anybody out there has dealt with that problem successfully, because apparently it is like legion in Facebook, I really would like to be alerted to certain things via phone. But yeah, it's the thing where, and it's so, that's like, that is like computers in a nutshell. The idea that I went through and unchecked everything, saved it and double checked it, and then you went back later and it had just reverted itself. It had just undone the changes for no reason. It is one of those things where if you did not know better, you would think the computer did have a mind of its own, where you set it and then it just changed back willfully for like no reason. I mean, that's the thing that makes you want to throw it out the goddamn window.
Well, I have three things. One is talking about the cars. I've been very frustrated because I burned out the fuse that does the light. This just happened day before yesterday. The instrument panel light,
yes,
the fuse that does that. So I have no, which I don't think about until it's nighttime, and then I can't see anything. And apparently, just have recently figured out that I've left my lights on twice when I've parked the car. Since then, realized that the problem is the same fuse that does the instrument panel light does the ding sound to let me know I left my lights on.
That's great.
So when I'm getting out of the car, I'm not hearing the ding, so I'm not remembering to turn my lights off. But I'm not consciously thinking about it, so therefore I don't know.
What kind of car are you driving? Is it like a Honda or something?
It's a Nissan Sentra. It's like a 30-year-old Nissan Sentra.
See, that just I have never, and I think they have actually started to adjust this. Like, I think my wife's car is like this now. I have never understood why the lights just didn't go off when you turned off the goddamn car.
Yeah, some of them do now. It's like when I was driving that year and a half of glory when I was driving the Toyota Highlander, where you just turn off the car and the lights stay on for a little while, like for about 30 seconds after you close and lock the door, and then they just automatically go off and you don't ever have to think about it.
I mean, I can understand why that might have been a little tricky because they have to put in a thing that like pauses, that it delays the shutoff for 30 seconds.
Yeah.
But I have never understood. When you turn, I mean, we could have been doing that in 1910. Yeah. We could have, on the Tin Lizzie, we could have had, turn off the key, The lights go off. Guess what? If you need them back on, there's a switch. You can just turn them back on.
Okay. Second thing, I'm thing that's been frustrating me is I use this thing, TweetDeck, for a thing. And supposedly, I'm supposed to be able to also post to Facebook when I post something to TweetDeck. And yet, even though I have put in my name and my password, it always goes, sorry, can't connect with Facebook.
Why don't you just use the Twitter application?
Can you also auto post to Facebook?
Yeah, that's what I do.
Okay, well, I just need to do that.
I think and I used a thing called there's something where adults now have to talk like children by dint of the names of the things we use. I used Twitterific for a long time, but Twitter themselves and those companies, I feel bad for them, but they had to have known this was coming. Twitter at one point just said, "Hey, look, here's our own iPhone app." Bam, and they make one for the desktop too. So I use just the Twitter iPhone app. Speaking for myself, although as we've learned, Facebook is a little mercurial, I have never had any problem. I post something to Twitter and now the only problem is that sometimes you will find that you don't want to do that and there's no way to make it like selective. If you post something to Twitter, it will – and then if you – so what I'll do sometimes is like I will post something to Facebook and then I'll post a shorter version of the same announcement to Twitter, or if I post it to Twitter – but I also want to put like more detail in the Facebook posting, you are then obliged to go to Facebook and delete the Twitter posting. So it's like sometimes you will double post. Okay. But I have no issue with that. I use the Twitter Facebook or the Twitter iPhone app.
And item the third, we had this conversation and the thing about the messages inspired me to go look and see if I'd missed any Facebook messages and discovered that I had sitting there a very long, very nice letter from a listener in Australia and an invitation from Courtney Hameister to be put on the list for last Friday's LiveWire
show. Chelsea Kane.
She sent me a Facebook thing and said, "Hey, this should be a great thing.
You should go to that.
Why don't you come and I'll put you on the list?"
Fail.
Courtney Hameister reaching out to me after my repeated humiliations and now it's like it's as if I snubbed her.
Well, you did. It's not as if.
We're just going to end up being just like nemeses through my sheer, ham-fistedness.
Yeah.
In trying to deal with her.
Yeah. I would say that it's probably irretrievable at this point. I don't think I can be fixed.
It's going to be one of those things where I'm going to see her somewhere and she's just going to throw her glass of wine in my face.
Yeah.
And just spin and turn and walk away.
Slap you. All right. God damn, it's 3:30.
I know.
Well, let's just do this before
we don't have to. We don't have to go anywhere.
What?
We don't have to be anywhere. Nobody's coming in.
That's true. We should take a moment to talk about Squires Electric. If you find yourself befuddled, not just by technological things, not just the computer, not just the Intertron, it's not just the not just the toaster oven, it's not just Facebook, it's not just it's not just that, it's actual wiring. It's actually just more of a hardware problem, less of a software problem. You want to contact Squires Electric at 503-252-1609. It's 503-252-1609. By the way, somebody says an argument for using TweetDeck is that apparently you do have the option of whether to also post that to Facebook. Whereas with just the Twitter app for the iPhone, it's automatic. They assume you always, which is probably a strategic thing on Twitter's part. They assume you always want to be double posting everywhere.
And I don't always want to be double posting.
So there you go. I've never had any issue with
Unfortunately,
that.
Unfortunately, it doesn't work.
Well, you're not even single posting.
It posts to Twitter just fine. It's just that when I push the little button that says also send this to Facebook, it comes back and says, sorry, I can't connect to Facebook.
Here's what I would do. I would just, because it's free, I would download and install the Twitter app for your iPhone, because that will let you figure out if it's your iPhone, if it's your app, or if it's Facebook. Because if you download the Twitter app and you try it and it works, then you know the problem is TweetDeck. And blah, 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 blah. See what I just did there, where I was like, here's a simple test you can do, and this will help you determine where the problem is, and then you'll know the fix. I can kind of do that with stuff like that. But really, once we get past 99-cent and or free applications for your phone, I don't know how to fix or diagnose anything at all. Much less things that lurk inside my walls like metallic snakes waiting to fill me with megawatt flavored death. So If you have to deal with electricity, if you have to deal with wiring, if you have to deal with, you know, whether it's going to be upgrading a system or whether it's going to, you know, you had some sort of a, you know, the problem with a fire, you've had some sort of problem with moving from one house to another, and you're trying to, you know, make all your things work, and you find that either your broadband's not capable of it, you know, your Ethernet wiring's not up to speed, or you just don't have enough, you know, you don't have enough outlets into the wall. You know, you move into a house like in St. John's or something, or, you know, John's Landing, and, you know, there's like one plug and then like a bare bulb swinging in the middle of the room, and that's it. And so you just end up with trailing extension cords everywhere. Just don't deal with that. And just get it done by somebody who knows what they're doing. You know, and it, and don't, you know, it's like your cousin will tell you he like knows a guy, and then, you know, then the guy shows up and he's like, you got some other guys, and one of them's, you know, one of them's wearing a patch, and it's a whole thing. Just don't, you know, don't just go like the low bid off Craigslist. You talk to Squires Electric, and it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business. They can make your life easier. That is Squires Electric, 503-252-1609 or Squires Electric. .com 503-252-1609 or SquiresElectric.com. Our proud sponsor of this, the Rick Emerson radio program. All right. Do we have anything especially pressing in terms of news that we have to get to?
Well, I did want to do the Hitler birthday party story.
Well, of course, everybody wants to do the Hitler birthday party.
But no, nothing, too newsy.
Okay, well, let's. Here's your Nazi watch for Tuesday right here on the Rick Emerson radio program.
Police are investigating a smoke bomb explosion that abruptly ended a birthday party celebration for Adolf Hitler at a banquet hall in Lyons, Illinois. A party complete with a decorated cake and Nazi banners.
Hitler.
The suspect, a man with a backpack, had ordered a grilled cheese sandwich before he went into the restroom and set off the smoke bomb. The description we have to work off of is very vague, Lyons Police Chief Harley Schinker said.
Schinker?
Of the person responsible to the for the damage to P.J. Clem's restaurant and banquets.
P.J. Clem. That's so great. That's like being Cletus Van Damme.
It's P.J. Clem's Restaurant and Banquets.
P.J. Clem's, an eating and drinking establishment.
Art Jones, chairman of the America First Committee, said he organized the party and that about 60 people attended. In addition to celebrating the 122nd anniversary of Hitler's birth, which is April 20th, Jones said the group marked the start of the Civil War on April 12th, 1861. The party included two cakes. One was decorated with the words, Happy Birthday, Adolf Hitler. The other bore the phrase, the South was right, white men fight.
Uh-huh.
Police arrived at the restaurant and banquet hall about 6:15 p.m. Saturday after receiving a call about the smoke. The smoke bomb caused no serious damage or injuries, but police evacuated and closed the restaurant to allow the sheriff's bomb squad to search the building. Pete Klemetsos, general manager of Clem's, said he was unaware of the party's specific purpose when it was scheduled several weeks ago. The same group has rented the banquet hall in previous years and was holding a peaceful gathering. There was no Heil Hitler or anything like that, Klemetsos said.
They didn't seem Nazi-ish.
Although banners bearing swastikas were displayed, he said, they didn't wear uniforms. There were no outside demonstrations. A group came in and said they wanted me to cook for them. Chicken, beef, sausage. I didn't ask who they were.
Okay. There you go. There's your... You know, this is—I hate to start another angels on the head of a pin conversation, but you know, we were just talking a little bit the whole, you know, the whole thing about the fantasy and the sci-fi and the black and the white and the why is it that whatever. You know, you don't see a lot of World War II recreation groups. You know, guys that were like half of them are the Allies and half of them are Nazis and they're shooting at each other in a field. You don't really see a lot of that. Why is that?
I don't know. Maybe they have them like in Europe where the battles actually occur.
I think they have them even less in Europe. I think in Europe they would arrest you if you tried something like that. I know in Germany they would arrest you.
Maybe it's just harder because the warfare was much more complicated. But I bet there are guys who have the little figurines and the little models.
And they're pushing them around with a stick thing. Yeah, it's weird because we're so big on war reenactments here. And sometimes of wars that were fought here, like Civil War reenactments. But I mean, you know, there's like the guys who get together into like either the Battle of Verdun or something, and they want to, like, you know, they're in Pocatello, Idaho, and they're gonna rent a guy's farm for the weekend so they can they can pretend that they're storming like a barn in the French countryside or whatever. It's strange that we only do that with certain wars. You know, nobody really does. You know, nobody does like a Holocaust reenactment or something. You know, it's just as the Onion once noted. Actually, that's it is strange that we'll have how to host a murder parties, but nobody really does a how to host a rape party. No real reason for that. There's your Nazi watch.
I want to know who decorated the cake that said "Happy Birthday, Adolf Hitler."
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, did they just, like, get it from, like, a grocery store or a bakery?
That's a home job. You don't want to leave that job to amateurs, Don. I mean, they always get the, you know, they get the face all wrong, the proportions, you know, it's like, no.
The swastika's going the wrong way.
Yeah, no. You can't, you know. Plus, I mean, it's, I would think that would be the sort of thing that if you ordered a Nazi cake from a bakery, you might be, I don't know that you would feel comfortable eating that if you didn't see it prepared yourself. I would imagine they might have a justified fear that there may have been a foreign object or two placed into the cake during the preparation stage.
I think maybe if they were, like, really afraid of what other people thought, they might not be Nazis.
I don't know that they're – I think maybe they just don't want to eat poo. I mean, that really – and who can disagree? I mean, really, that's a thing that unites all of us, I think.
When I worked at – when I was working as a pastry chef at the hotel in Salem, it was – we were hosting the Republican the Proposition 12 or whatever it was the first anti-gay rights initiative thing that came through. And because Salem, the hotel we were at, is the only place with banquet facilities, we actually were hosting their, like, victory party, their voting party. And it was one of those things where it's like having to decide, am I going to just, like, not work tonight on principle? Or do I need the pan? So what we ended up doing was the chef and I, we were working together, and we put together these huge fruit trays. And they were on these giant, like, sort of 3-foot by 3-foot mirrors. And then you organized all these different kinds of sliced fruit. And we designed them so that the watermelon made big pink triangles in the middle of each fruit tray.
That's fantastic.
So it was our own little subversive kind of sticking it to the man thing.
Excellent. Good for you. I'm legitimately impressed by that.
Well done.
All right. So that was our Nazi watch. We said we were going to have a taser watch, but let's bump that to tomorrow unless it's time sensitive, because we can do the house thing and the greatest songs ever made.
Yes.
So let's let's do the house recap here in just one moment. Let's do this. Let's do one more of whatever. It could be the watch. It could be whatever. We'll do one more story. We'll do the house watch. Then we'll do greatest song ever made. And then we'll call it a day after that. Oh. So I got to get the house bed ready here. So here is Don Taylor.
A Central Florida man is happy to have his stolen car back after he randomly pulled up behind it at a red light on Monday. Ben Gaskill said he left on Friday with his family to New Smyrna Beach for a weekend vacation. When he came back on Sunday, his wife's 2005 Hyundai Sonata was gone from the driveway. Gaskill said someone had broken into their house and stolen the spare keys. He said he was driving to the hardware store after work on Monday when he stopped at a red light, and when he looked up, he was stopped directly behind the stolen car. He said the car had a similar flower sticker in the back window that he had put there for his wife. You never really think you're going to see the car again, Gaskill said. He called 911 and stayed on the phone with the dispatcher until deputies arrived and arrested the suspects.
That must have been uniquely satisfying, though. You don't really get to do that a lot in your life.
Yeah. It was three 17-year-olds and a 16-year-old who were arrested. Oh, and they found marijuana in the car.
Of course they did. You know, do you ever answer a number you don't recognize?
Patrick actually called somebody back the other night who had called my phone, and I didn't recognize it, but it was from Tacoma. So I thought maybe it was a member of his family or something. And I said, here, call and see if this is somebody from your family and there's some emergency, because they didn't leave a message. And it turned out, no, it was just somebody who had a wrong number. I think somebody tried to reach whoever had the phone number before I did or something.
Skis. Yeah.
Usually I don't.
You know, Tacoma was very nearly the state capital. Like, if it hadn't been Olympia, they were going to make Tacoma the state capital of Washington. Also, so my phone was just ringing now with some area code that I didn't recognize, so I shunned that. But
I figure if, you know, I've got a message on there, they can leave a message.
That's my thing. Well, Laura never figures that out. She answered this morning, as I was getting ready to leave to come to work, she answered the phone. It was an unknown number, and it was like, Mormons have this thing. They'll never let you go. You can never get away from Mormons. It's like trying to leave Jonestown. She answered the phone this morning, and it was like the local bishop, you know, the guy who's over her, our stake or whatever. She's on the list. Like, they track you everywhere you move in the country. And it's like they know that she's here, and they know that she doesn't go to church. And so, like, if you are a Mormon and you move somewhere and you stop going to church, like, it's just a matter of time. You will get a phone call from them asking in their own very, very polite, very, friendly, very "we mean you no harm" kind of way, like why you haven't been attending services and if you plan on resuming at some point. So, and then it was just, and of course she can never bring herself to be to be rude or brusque with them, especially because she knows that that would get back to her parents, because the whole thing is it's all very interconnected. So she was like ensnared into this like 12-minute conversation with, you know, with the friendly Mormon bishop so-and-so this morning. Was all, and I told him, like, why? What did it say when it rang? She's like, number unknown. I'm like, number unknown is number ignored. I mean, that's my whole thing. It's like people who will call you blocking their number. Like, sorry, friend, you know, and then they won't leave a message. I'm like, I guess what? That's one guy who's never going to get to talk to me ever, ever, ever.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that guy can die. Not the Mormon. The guy, the abstract guy who calls me and blocks his number.
Well, the thing, like we were talking earlier about Facebook and Twitter and people with cell phones and that sort of thing. So one thing that really bothers me, and this used to bother me just about the telephone and now bothers me about the computer and stuff too, is people who don't seem to understand that just because you have access to all of these ways to communicate with people, you don't have to be connected to them
right.
at all times.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you don't, you know, we're having dinner together. Put your damn phone down. You know, you're going to sit down and watch a movie with somebody. Turn your phone off. Put the laptop aside. Get off the Facebook. You know, I mean, if I'm just sitting at home alone or something, sure, like I will multitask with two or three things open at a time. But I don't have to. And sometimes I will just turn my phone off, put it in another room to charge, get off the laptop. And I'm incommunicado for like, you know, 8 or 10 hours. And it's interesting how people will get kind of bent out of shape if they don't see you on Facebook for a while, you know, and you haven't been on the Twitter. It's like, are you okay?
Right, right.
Like, I'm not like on the computer 24 hours a day. Believe it or not, I'm not. Some people seem to be. You don't have to be. And it's the same thing with your phone. You don't have to answer the phone. If I don't know who it is and I don't, you know, feel like rolling that dice, it's like, you know, they can leave a message or not.
You know what I wish I had is I wish I had a way to alter the timestamps like on Twitter or Facebook or something for when you posted something. You know, because I don't think it uses the timestamp from your computer. I think it uses like the timestamp of like the Facebook mothership or something, because that's like one of those. It's like there used to be a thing where you would like, you would like send you before email was omnipresent. You would send an email to your boss. And I used, you know, I knew guys who would swing into the office like on a Friday, you know, at like 10 p.m. or something. And they would send like a single email off to the boss, or they would CC him on an email. The implication being that they were there just burning the midnight oil, even though that really wasn't the case.
Yeah.
And you can't really do that anymore. But there is a thing with like time stamping on Facebook, especially, or it's the opposite. Like sometimes like I will post something like, you know, because I do keep kind of late hours, and I'll post something late at night. And then I kind of wish that that was alterable, because it seems like one of the things about the internet is that you can sort of choose, you know, you can choose how you present yourself and how, you know, what you're, you know, what kind of information you share and what kind of information you don't. But I guess that's the downside of using, again, Facebook, is that like you're just not really, you know, you're not, you are allowing them to have a certain amount of control over that in exchange for the fact that it's like a free service and whatnot. Without further ado, here is your, there you go, house recap. Helps if it's turned up over here. Your house recap for Tuesday. So this is House Episode 19, Season 7. Last night. I don't know. Dawn?
Yeah. It was nice to see them give Amber Tamblyn some time, some screen time, even though her character just never really got particularly meaty or interesting.
It was kind of a good send-off, though.
It was a nice little send-off, although I gotta tell you, unless they come back, like the last episode of this season, and say that serial killer guy showed up and killed her. Unless they say, oh, look, she went off to have a bright, shiny future. Oh, killed by the serial killer
dead.
Guy. Then I'm writing the show off forever. I am not coming back next season. If they do not pay off the serial killer guy in any way, I am writing off House.
It really is. It is interesting that, I mean, I'm not saying they have to, like, it has to take over their lives, but it is interesting that, like, no one outside the hospital appears to have ever known about that either. Like, that's one of those things. Did they all just band together and decide to not tell anybody?
And apparently to never talk about it amongst themselves or think about it ever again.
Hey, remember that time that guy was here and he killed and ate all those people? That was kind of weird. No.
Yeah.
It's like they'd rather just sit and talk about chickens or something. So that, by the way, the whole thread of like the ongoing, like the raising the bar for zaniness continued, because there was the monster truck rally, and then there was the potato gun thing, and then last night there's this whole thing clearly stolen from The Social Network where House and Wilson are like competing to see who can like keep a chicken in the hospital or something.
And the lack of cleverness of that was, you know, I think I think what would have they'd done this before. Where there was an episode that was based on Cuddy, and it was done a lot better. I think if you're going to do something where you're going to focus primarily on a character and then have your other main characters doing things tangentially in the background, you should make them, if they're going to be weird, make them really weird. Put her in a position where she really can't quite grasp what it is they're doing. You know? You know, it's like, have the chicken and then just never see the chicken again.
Right.
And then have a scene later where Wilson is just wearing, like, rubber boots and a bandit mask. And then she just never knows why.
It was also weird that they had this whole subplot of, like, the chicken, because it... Did it seem... I mean, maybe this is a strange thing to fix in on. Did it seem strange to you when House did the whole thing of having the dog go fetch Wilson's chicken, that the chicken came back alive?
Yes.
That doesn't really happen. If you send a dog to fetch a chicken, you're going to get a dead chicken back to you. That's how animals typically work. That seemed strangely... That actually took me out of the show, because that seemed like a thing that was probably written one way, and somebody somebody in the chain of command looked at the script and said, well, we can't be killing a chicken. That would be, you know, that'll get us in trouble. People will think we're horrible people, so we got to change it.
Well, also, whenever you use live animals on a show, you've got an advisor from the Humane Society there as well. And so the person from the Humane Society probably told them, you know, you probably shouldn't do that.
But it seems like they can get around that. I mean, it's like, you could have like a fake dead chicken. It doesn't have to be like a real one or whatever. It just seems strangely gutless for House, which is all about, like, I mean, again, you know, they had a whole thing about a guy who killed people and ate them, you know, and also the show routinely shows
people bleeding from their eyeballs.
Well, and just revels in horrible human behavior and awful, you know, edgy things, and yet they kind of, no pun intended, they kind of chickened out on that, which, not that I really care, I'm just saying that was a moment where I sort of went, well, wait a minute, that just doesn't seem in keeping. That just gave it the feel of a show that was done by committee.
Well, yeah, and it also made absolutely no sense, because I don't care how wacky and zany, you know, Wilson and House's madcap stunts become, they are still both medical professionals, and they're not going to have chickens running around a place where there are people who have life-threatening diseases.
Especially because, like, I think I've asked you this before. Is it really pronounced denouement? It's not. It's denouement, isn't it?
I don't know.
It wouldn't be moi anyway, because
no,
it's M-E-N-T.
Denouement.
Well, wasn't the resolution, though, denouement, that the patient got sick by eating canned poultry, which is available everywhere?
Yeah.
I mean, so, you know, you would think that they would know, you know, that you don't do that. So where does one get canned poultry, by the way? Because that was the explanation. Is that she was sick after eating, quote, canned poultry.
Well, I think it was during her preparations for sailing. She had talked about how she got really sick of eating freeze-dried food. So I think that during her practice sails, going out for days at a time, she was eating a lot of, like, canned and freeze-dried food. And you can get canned chicken just like you can get canned tuna.
I thought she said that, like, her dad gave it to her as a gag, though. She was like, it was a novelty gift.
Well, mate, yeah.
Because that's what you'd eat, is a novelty food given to you that you were sort of unsure about. It seemed really weird, like the resolution. I know that the bizarre fantastical illnesses anyway. Although it is weird, but after watching House for so many years, I have no idea what any of these treatments or diseases are, but I recognize all the names. I'm like, oh, granulomyelitis. Yes, of course. No. Start him on interferon. You know, I have no idea what those things are, but I just hear them referenced all the time. So it seems like the disease itself is interesting enough. The idea of, like, coming up with the equally bizarre method of contraction, that just seems like you're over-solving the problem. I mean, you know, they don't have to have also gotten it in some bizarre way. Just making it a strange, or making the hunt for the illness. There was that great moment halfway through the episode when 13 actually said something like, well, case closed, you know, with 29 minutes left or something in the episode. So I, you know.
I did like the conclusion, though, of Amber Tamblyn's character Masters ultimately coming to the conclusion of, like, no, I really don't want this to be my career, where I trick people and lie to them and I'm surrounded by crazy people. and someone ends up getting their arm chopped off because I fooled them into it. Well, don't really think I want this to be the place I work.
And I ducked out of the room at one point and didn't actually, I didn't even use my iPhone remote control to stop the playback, but I ducked out of the room at one point and came back and, like, they did cut the woman's arm off.
Yes.
And she got, like, everybody on the medical crew. Now this, I know our recaps have just become a long listing every week of things that are totally implausible, but she got, like, everybody to sort of go along with it. Hey, I'm going to trick a woman so we can amputate her arm. Everybody sign off on that.
Actually, apparently, no, they didn't. That was the deal, is that they were actually, the rest of the crew was actually shocked when they discovered that she had dosed the woman to put her into cardiac arrest.
Okay, so then I must have missed something, because it seemed very much to me like she had kind of gotten them to go along with the amputation.
No. She put the woman in, she got it into her head, she got the bug in her ear about what happened to House.
Right.
That the doctor, that whoever had power of attorney could sign off on the surgery once she, you know, if she, her parents could sign off on it once she was unconscious and in surgery. And so, basically, she made her sick. She
induced the cardiac, yeah, the coronary.
She, yeah, induced it, and then said, you know, quick, she's going into surgery. You can amputate right now. Sign this. And the parents went, okay. But nobody else on the team knew that she had actually induced it until that moment when she walked in. She said, force blah 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 on her, right, to make her better. And they went, huh?
And so now it's 13. She's back as, like, a regular. Do we know if she's back as an actual part of the cast? Like,
I guess
as a permanent
she's
part
back
of the cast?
For the time being, until, I guess, she goes off to make more movies or something.
Because they do have that weird thing on the show where they seem to be fixated on keeping the number of cast members and the balance of, you know, let's, like, a woman leaves, must be replaced by a woman. Guy leaves, must be replaced by a guy. They seem so fixated on that actual makeup of House's crew. I think with the exception of that time when they had, like, the whole class of students who were all trying to get a gig there, that they just they never ever shake it up. So it's like I just sort of assume that 13 is back now.
Speaking of one thing we were talking earlier about the very whiteness and the Eurocentricity of science fiction and fantasy, have you noticed how in the law enforcement and medical communities on television, how few Asians there are?
That is sort of strange.
Because, you know, in real life, there are a lot of Asian doctors and nurses and counselors.
Well,
and but in on the TV, really not so much. Like, almost none.
Well, maybe. I mean, I say speaking for all communities everywhere. Let me speak for all non-white peoples. I mean, do you suppose that is because there isn't, and I don't know that this is true, but do you suppose that there isn't as active, like, a lobbying push from the Asian community to see representation on television? I don't know.
I think so. I think in the 80s there was some push to get more Asian actors on television and things, and it worked for a while. And then I think they just kind of let up. And we've just gone back to getting lazy and going, and we figured, you know, the default character is white. But we have to have some black people. And, oh, yeah, and somebody's got to be a lesbian. And that's, I think, as far as diversity goes in television anymore.
Well, and maybe the other reason for that is that, I mean, notwithstanding certain wartime imagery, that Asian actors, there isn't the perception that they are always on TV in some negative role. In other words, you know, there's true or false, right or wrong, there's that idea that if you're, you know, the Mexican or black actor, you know, that you're always going to be cast as, like, a butler or a car thief. And maybe it's the whole thing of, like, maybe there's the belief on the part of writers or showcasters that Asians aren't having to overcome that, and so therefore they got to make, in other words, that
they don't have to help them out.
Well, there isn't as big a wrong to be righted, maybe.
But what happens is it's as in the parallel universe of television, it's as if Asians just almost don't exist. You rarely see Asian characters at all.
Yeah, well, you know where Asians really get the shaft. I say on behalf of you know, my Asiatic brothers, Asians really get the shaft in the sex scene department. Like, you never, I mean, very, very rarely do you see, like, the hot Asian guy who's sexing all the ladies. You know, you see.
I'm hoping a lot of these actors are getting some work off this Hawaii Five-0 remake.
I didn't even know that was still on the air. I figured that had just gone away.
It might not.
I thought we all just sort of looked and went, oh, mistake.
I've never watched it.
That wasn't actually supposed to be on. That was just a gag. So, yeah, no, that's a thing that has actually stuck out at me for a long time. That, I mean, you see the, you know, like, in Asian women, I mean, obviously there's a certain amount of fetishization that happens there in some sort of, you know, in some kind of writing, in some niches. But I would say that Asian women are almost neutral in the sense that if you see an Asian woman as the romantic lead, I don't think that it's, they don't play up the fact yeah. that she's Asian. It's like she's just another hot chick. But whereas I think Asian men, there is some stereotype there because you very rarely see an Asian guy as the romantic lead. At least in the United States. And I just, that is a thing that of all of the racial treatments on television, that's the one I noticed the most. Sorry.
So Hollywood, get on that.
Seriously.
Do something about that.
They quit typing Asian penis jokes, everybody. For the love of God. Jesus. This is really what technology is.
It brings it all
for.
Back around to the helicopter.
It all comes back to penis, Don. All right. So there you go. There's your house watch. So we'll do greatest songs ever made here in a second, and then we'll come out back briefly and then decide and wrap it up. I will say, today's Tuesday, so tomorrow we'll be joined in studio by Mr. Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week. Thursday, Ryan White, music editor from The Oregonian. And Friday, Big Jim Willig with another installment of Humor Me, Comedy 101. And then tomorrow is Justified as well. So that'll be Justified on FX tomorrow. All right, hold on. Let me just get a little second before I speak here.
Is it time for another delicious Visa?
It is. And by the way, somebody asked me where I got this bed, and I couldn't remember if this was one that was sent or if this was one that I just found in my big pile of unsorted stuff. Let's see. Tony says, it's the Super Mario Land music. I am the one who sent you the MP3 of that. And then he says, gah, all caps, two H's, gamer cred passing by, gah. So there you go. So this is the Super Mario Land music, but I think it's a different mix of it. It's from listener Tony. So there you go.
Somebody told me that there's there are actual CDs of the Katamari
yes.
music.
I have it.
I need that.
Hold on. I think I've got that. Hold on a second.
I love all of the songs.
It's crazy.
On Katamari.
No, seriously. The thing is, it will put you into, it will give you a seizure. I mean, just listening to it, you will go into some sort of epileptic fit. Hold on. I'm pretty sure I've got the Katamari soundtrack here.
And the problem is if you actually play Katamari, then you get stuck with at least one of those songs in your head for like a good day and a half.
It's insane. It's like this hyperkinetic Japanese pop. It goes like 1,000 miles an hour, and it's the songs are all 90 seconds long, and they're all like 400 beats a minute, and they're just insanely, it's like you just feel like some sort of an insulin shock coming on here. Let's see if I've got that. I think that might be on my backup drive. Everyone just amuse yourself for a moment.
So this is Mario just running along and hopping over mushrooms and
I believe this
and
is
popping,
the,
jumping up and popping things in the head.
I believe this is the menu screen.
Oh, okay.
But it's some alternate mix of that.
It's the dance club mix.
That's exactly what it's the 12-inch done.
Yeah.
Let's see. I think, let's see which one. Here we go. So this is, okay, so this, I believe, is just, this is from Beautiful Katamari.
It just makes me want to roll up the whole world in a big ball. Here come the pencils. Oh, there's the lawn flamingos.
I mean, it's just...
there's giant bowls of rice. With the sumo wrestlers.
It's all just this. I mean, the entire soundtrack... And how dumb, I mean, if not entirely unexpected, that I know all of these songs, just like you do. Let's see, here's another one.
Yes.
See, they all just turn into insanity at some point. They lull you in. You think it's going to be something calm and soothing, and then they just become this. It's like 70 of the happiest songs you've ever heard in your life compressed into a single recording and played at double speed. I'll do one more here, and then we'll do something else. Then we'll do Greatest Songs Ever, which is not going to be this, by the way. This is like the time I decided it would be a good idea to listen to the Dance Dance Revolution soundtrack. I chose really poorly there.
This would be great driving music, though. On a road trip, just on a long stretch of the five.
Jesus, God. Let's see if I can, It's just insane. It's like you wonder if this music is actually doing something to your brain. If it's fragmenting your brain in some way.
Your eyes go all wonky and you just have a seizure on the floor like on that episode of The Simpsons.
What's like they always talk about, you know, the like using social networking and the internet is enough to like, you know, how your brain gets sliced into smaller and smaller slices of attention and you're unable to focus on anything for more than 7 seconds. I think the Katamari soundtrack does that. This is all, let me see if I can just, here's a little bit. This is from the Dance Dance Revolution soundtrack. I don't know why. I went through this phase. I've never played. I mean, I tried like twice and then I realized I was terrible at it.
I cannot in any way imagine you playing Dance Dance Revolution.
No, I tried like when I first saw it, I'm like, what's this? And the guy's like, well, it's like Tetris, but you do the thing by dancing. And I was like, well, that's interesting. And I tried it like twice. And I went, well, I suck at this and it's embarrassing. So no. But I went through this phase where I was fascinated by Dance Dance Revolution by the cut because this is not just in Utah but in here. I think I started watching in Utah and here. I would go to these arcades and I would watch because it was always boys. It was like just having turned teenage boys. Like they were like 12, 13, 14. And it was these boys who would show up and they just looked like your normal run of the mill, like, you know, like early teen guy. But it was like they would each show up with like a duffel bag and like a bottle of water and like a towel. And they were like, clearly, it was like they were crossed. It was like they were training for like some sort of like the Olympiad or something. It was, obviously like that was what they spent their afternoons doing was like training for the World Dance Dance Revolution Championships. And it was so bizarre. And every arcade I went to in every city, I would see the same dynamic of pairs of teenage boys showing up. And like, taking it really, really seriously across all like cultural boundaries, they would just spend like hours, just playing Dance Dance Revolution. It was the weirdest thing. So I was kind of really fascinated by the culture of that game for a while, and so I decided to listen to the soundtrack. And this is a thing you can only listen to for so long, for it just drives you mental.
Yeah,
yeah. It's because it's all this, or occasionally it would be like that, but like Johnny B. Goode. So it'd be like some Asian version of Johnny B. Goode played at like quadruple speed with like a chipmunk voiced Asian woman sort of screaming the lyrics in the foreground. And then after a while, you just have to kill yourself. All right, let's never play that again.
Okay.
Have you seen that Katamari thing that turns your browser into a where you can roll up any web page?
No.
Oh.
No, I haven't seen
it. I'll send that to you. It's it's a little thing you go to where you can you use your mouse and you can actually roll up any web page on the internet as a Katamari thing.
I tried doing the there's a Katamari app for the iPhone and I tried playing it on the iPhone, but it's just not.
Do you tilt it or do you actually?
Yeah, no, you tilt the phone. But you have to sit up with it like flat out and level so you can tilt it forward and back and stuff. It's like playing that labyrinth game.
Yeah, the first game I ever saw on a smartphone, Jason Crumpet was playing that labyrinth game with the metal, the ball bearing in the wooden maze, and it was like on the on an Android, and it was weird because you felt like the ball hit the side of the wall and everything. It was all really creepy. No, this Seamus sent this to me, and I sent it to my wife, and she was all just like, she was this nuts. But it's like, yeah, you go to any webpage, Yahoo or your Gmail or anywhere, and it lets you just use the mouse and go da da do 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 and just roll up the page Katamari style. All right. Okay. And all right, we're just gonna okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And fantastic. All right. Without further ado, I am Rick Emerson, and this is the greatest songs ever made here on The Rick Emerson Show. The phrase, a few chords and the truth, has been used so often for so many bands, so many genres, it risks becoming meaningless. But it's one of those cliches, a few chords and the truth, which exists for a reason, and that reason is demonstrated in spades by today's selection. In music, one can be a powerful performer, or seductive, or menacing, or merely propulsive. But one of the trickiest acts to execute is to be believable, to effortlessly cross the line between crowd-pleasing and confessional, to merge the performer and the protagonist. And sometimes, this truth is what Alan Berg once called emotional honesty, meaning that even if the particulars of the song don't mirror the writer or performer's own experiences, they are true in terms of meaning, of intent, of state of mind and emotion. Put another way, sometimes you hear the song, and it's about him, even if it isn't. This was driven home to me several years ago when a friend and I spent a long night playing records for each other. We'd formed a band, and we labored for endless hours to create the perfect song, the perfect sound, and of course, dissecting what was important to us in an artist, or a guitar line, or a perfectly turned lyric. One night, we were going out to dinner, and he and I were speeding along the back road when I put in a cassette, and I said I had a song he really needed to hear. 60 seconds or so into the song, he pulled over, and we spent the next few minutes listening by the side of the road, and he said later that the song was exceptional for its immediate catchiness and for its raw, bristling energy, for its sadness and vulnerability, and for the way that those tones blended with undeniable masculinity. And for one other reason. When the song ended, my friend had said one simple thing. He said, "I believe him." And believe him, we all did. The song is about an achingly doomed and flawed man who sees his life spiraling down and down into forgotten nothingness. And though the particulars might not be true, you will never doubt the sincerity of the song. It rings true from the first note, the first chord, and from the first lyric all the way to the bitter end. Later interviews with the performer have given credence to the idea that the song is at least partly autobiographical, but of course, you'd know that anyway, just by listening. It is a hard luck story, as the songwriter himself calls it, a forceful cry, a lament, a plea, a folk prayer. And it is one of the greatest songs ever made. From their 1990 self-titled album, this is Social Distortion with Ball and Chain on The Rick Emerson Show on the Emerson News Network.
I was sure to find myself there. You can run, ball and chain.
It is the Rick Emerson radio program. There's Social Distortion, Ball and Chain, which, by the way, is 5 minutes and like 59 seconds, but does not feel like a 6 minute song at all. And it's got two guitar solos, which is the sort of thing that very, very rarely works. It works there and it works in my Sharona. All right. Dawn, anything else before we bring things to a conclusion today?
No, not a thing. Nothing at all.
Okay.
Unless you have something you want to share with people.
Well, I do. Why are you talking that way?
I don't know.
Just doing it. You're doing a thing. Yeah, no, I have a thing I'm going to mention in a second. I just don't know if, if there was anything else we'd other than the Taser watch that we were going to get to and that we didn't. So we've kind of got to all of our bits of business here, yes?
I had this one letter I was going to read, but it would start like a whole long conversation, which we don't have time for right now.
Thing. Okay, so let's we do that tomorrow?
We'll do that tomorrow.
Okay, so will you remember that? Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll write it down, too. That's a discussion. Awesome. All right. Dick jokes. Check. All right. Awesome. That's my job is done. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. So join us tomorrow when I guess we'll include Mr. Aaron Mesh of Willamette Week. Thursday, we will be joined by Ryan White, music editor from The Oregonian. And then Friday, Big Jim Willig, going to be in the studio with another installment of Humor Me Comedy 101. We'll have more on this like as the weeks unfold. But somebody asked me, I got an email about this the other day, somebody asking about the book about the zombie economics. And that comes out on May 3rd, asking if there was going to be like an event or a reading or a signing or some such. So the short answer is yes. I'll put up a post about this and we'll have more of this as the weeks go on. But that is going to be Thursday, May 12th. That is going to be Thursday, May 12th, 7 p.m. At the Barnes & Noble at Lloyd Center. So make a note of that. That
Lloyd Center? You mean where the invisible shields are sold?
That's exactly where the invisible shields are sold, Don. Exactly. Well done and well spotted.
Thank you.
So that is Thursday, May 12th at 7 p.m. at the Barnes & Noble Lloyd Center. So we'll have more details on that, but so be listening for more, as they say. In the meantime, in between time, we draw the curtain down on this. Another exciting installment of the Rick Emerson radio program. After a brief musical interlude, we'll have an encore of today's Legion of News, followed by an encore of this very fine radio program. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon, at the News Desk. Don Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic, provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agler, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. Rick Emerson Show made possible by a generous grant from y'all. So thank you for listening. Please continue to spread the word. That never goes unappreciated. And it is Tuesday, April 19th, 2011. And that is The Frequency. Kenneth, as always, thank you for listening. Be safe. See y'all tomorrow. Bye now.